Blog Talk Radio.
So in America, black people should never be accused of being violent or advocating violence. In America, when a black man says, I have to defend myself, you should call that what it is, self-defense. And if America has the right to defend herself from her enemy, the black man in America has a right to defend himself from his enemy. If it's all right for police, I don't want to hear that. If it's all right, that hand patent has been done long enough.
I hold my marker like Huey P. Heller's revolver. Plotting vengeance to some bullet shells. Sail to Martin, I'm stressed. Puffing cigarettes, going through cartons, I'm back. Since the Panther leaders went up on charges, upset. I'll never meet them, but I'm with them regardless, my guess. They die for freedom, then they die for martyrs, they're blessed. But some shit needles in the pissy apartments, obsessed. My thoughts of treason, what they did to the father. Jesse Jackson in the face of his best in assassins. But wait, if I meet him, I'ma hand him a magnum and whisper in his ear, leaves none of them standing. It ain't fair, he ain't here, you still appearing at pageant. Imagine gagging in the dungeon, doors guarded by gunmen, beating me, but I'm sworn to mark in secrecy.
I feel you, son.
They will never weaken me, for the struggle till my fate reaches me.
You either pimping the system or getting pimped by the system. Don't want no slice of the pie, we want control of the kitchen. Gotta get this bread up, nigga, handle business and boss up. Ain't no slacking or slipping, perpetrating a shortcut. Spirit of love, putting in work on the grind. Gotta sacrifice that blood, that sweat and that time. If we see it, we need it, we want it, we get it through both. Plotted and planted, they own it, committed like roaches. Till we make it happen, it ain't no mystery, God. It's guaranteed when we move, scientifically guarded. It's like planting a garden, I'm just a seed of garbage in the field. Trying to see the fruits of the harvest, aiming long range. Grown folks do grown back, can't let the game change me. I got to change the game, I'm thinking long range. Grown folks do wrong things, can't let the game change me. I got to change the game.
One hand wash the other, both wash the face. Now real, recognize real, homie, stay in your place. What about the revolutionaries giving their lives? My soul's on ice, it's like I got blood in my eye. The price of freedom is bleeding. I ain't committing no treason. Why they hate my black skin? Y'all give me a reason. My mother say I'm an angel, women say I'm a monster. I grew up in the hood environment, lived amongst the thugs, the killers, the gangsters, the streets, they feel us. Ain't nothing realer than the feeling when you loving yourself. Just be a man, take a stand, don't be begging for help, help. My regulation is building my black nation. I'm running out of my patience, you owe us some reparations. Guns blowing, blood flowing, I ain't trying to be waiting. Out of control, selling our souls to Satan, 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 Satan. Larry Davis.
Nowadays, wars wage quietly through secret societies. Nobody don't fight back. We sit back silently. Reality hit hard. That could cause riots. See, they dumbing us down. Medicated with nonviolence. Television is Ritalin. They locking up and militant in you. But the struggle continues when they imprison you. You're in your dome, your home, your zone. You alone, petrified and deputized. Something has gone wrong. You an agent of the state? Well, wait. Because if you really wasn't choosing your side, somebody choosing your fate. Because the systems don't fight fair, gorillas don't fight fair. It's warfare everywhere. Look, it's right there in the gated communities. They hating on you and me. And Bush's economy, all these efforts is the streets. In this dog eat dog world, we gotta fill our stomachs. And we taking back what they took. Knock, knock, we coming, we coming, we coming.
Niggas is haters. I'ma tell y'all one thing, that y'all niggas can't fade. About my feelings, I'm all about my paper. Hey. Try to run it out of the rubber, don't play it. Hey. Yeah. I'm from the gutter, but niggas pitching that butter. But niggas up to your brother, they can knock my undercovers, man. Oh, all my sisters who want it young with their children, surviving to make a living. Hold your head up, there's a brighter day.
Peace, peace. Be back once again with Dr. Aline Bay's show, and we're going to be going over tonight Malik El Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X assassination, and who was really behind his assassination. The question that we will be asking is, was it John Ali, who was the third highest ranking member of the in the Nation of Islam under Honorable Elijah Muhammad? We know that John Ali was an FBI informant and possibly even an agent, allegations in which that he's never denied. Or was it Minister Farrakhan, in which that was at the Newark Mosque the night before those assassins left out in order to go and assassinate Minister Malcolm X. All right? Nevertheless, he has admitted that he may have set the climate for the assassination, meaning with his verbal slander and death threats, you know. However, he has stated on several occasions that he had nothing to do with it. Or was it simply the case of four religious zealots, possibly five or six, as we'll get into tonight, with names, you know, on the rampage, angry at Malcolm, public broadcast of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's extramarital affairs and alleged children out of wedlock. Of course, you know, these are terms, European terms, in order to get us angry at one another, you know, but we will be going into that tonight. I'm getting ready to bring my special guests on. Brother Big Man, are you here? Greetings, peace, Brother Big Man, you here? Brother Big Man? Brother Big Man, are you on the line?
Do you hear me?
Yes, I can, Brother Big Man. There we go. We got you now.
All right.
All right, all right. You know what's the topic for tonight. And before we get into it, I just want to say that one of the daughters of Malcolm X, Malika, Shabazz, you know, Malika, she just came out. She was one of the twins in which she actually was in the stomach or the belly of, you know, of Malcolm's wife or Betty Shabazz, you know, when Malcolm got shot. And she stated on the record that Louis Farrakhan, FBI, CIA, and the NOI killed Malcolm X. You know, matter of fact, there's an article that just came out actually today, as a matter of fact, Brother Big Man. And this is what it says. It says the FBI, CIA, the Nation of Islam, and Louis Farrakhan were responsible for the death of Malcolm X. The charges was levied over the weekend by Malcolm's ex's daughter, Malek Shabazz, and the interview was Sahara TV. She said that her family members were completely settled on the fact that the NOI conspired with the FBI and CIA to kill her father, Malcolm X. It says the Nation of Islam, were they involved? This was a question that was asked. She said absolutely. Was Farrakhan involved? Absolutely. He was also involved with the CIA, FBI, and everybody else. This is what she said. Shabazz goes on to say, with confidence that Sahara TV, Rudolph Okunowo, he states, yes, he, Farrakhan, was, and he know it, we know it, and everybody else who was around during that time know it too, she continues to say. All right, now she also goes on that, goes on to state that in 1960s, Farrakhan developed a strong enmity towards fellow NOI member Malcolm X. Of course, we know the reason was behind that, who backed a more moderate version of the so-called black civil rights than did Farrakhan. When Malcolm, in 1964, publicly revealed the NOI leader, Elijah Muhammad, had impregnated several of his teenage secretaries, in total it was nine, allegedly, and Farrakhan, outraged at what he perceived to be Malcolm's disloyalty, called him a traitor and denounced him in the NOI newspaper Muhammad Speaks. And it stated, only those who wish to be led to hell or to their doom will follow Malcolm. The die is cast. All right? Or is set. Excuse me. The die is set. And Malcolm shall not escape, especially after such evil, foolish talk as his benefactor, such as a man is worthy of death and would have been met, his death. It has not been for Muhammad's confidence in Allah and victory over his enemies. 10 weeks later, on February the 21st, of course, 1965, Malcolm X was killed in a Harlem Audubon ballroom by three gunmen. At least this is what is stated. But, of course, we know that two of them, in which that they caught later after the assassination, Thomas Hagen, actually was the only one that they actually caught. There was a second man in which that has been speculated to have been Gene Roberts, who later on, you know, we find out was boss, you know, undercover as well as also later on COINTELPRO, FBI, CIA. Let's get into some of that information, Brother Big Man, because we got a lot to cover here.
Yeah, what I want to do first,
mm-hmm.
I want to pay homage to the ancestors.
No doubt.
Because I truly believe I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the ancestors and the good brothers and sisters who have helped me through the years. I want to dedicate what I'm going to say to my teacher who I met when I was like 13 years old. A lot of the people who are here now who might even listen to this program might not know him, but his name was Edward Davis, and he was a street speaker. The next person I want to dedicate what I'm going to say is to Brother Steve Coakley, who, when I was at the age of 45, he taught me so much at the age of 45 that it was just a new light, new information coming in. And since he has, I won't even say died, I said since he was mysteriously murdered,
mm-hmm.
seems like nobody want to talk about Brother Steve Coakley.
That'll be definitely.
And the next person I want to dedicate this is to Brother Malcolm X, who opened up my eyes at a young age too, and who believed in telling the truth regardless where the chips may fall. So, I'm ready, brother.
All right. All right, so we know that, I guess we're going to go back to Iraq around the early 1990s, as well as, you know, the atmosphere around the whole thing. But there's just pieces of the puzzle that we definitely want to get into. Like, for example, as recently as 1993, Minister Farrakhan tried to justify Malcolm X's assassination when he said that in a speech, was Malcolm your traitor or ours? And if we dealt with Malcolm like a nation deals with a traitor, what the hell business of it is yours? A nation has to be able to deal with traitors and cutthroats and turncoats. All right. Now, we, for those who do know, we often know that that was the speech. In May 1995, however, Farrakhan spoke for the first time in a repentant tone about the slaying and admitted that he had helped create the atmosphere or the climate in which that led to it, and that he also stated that, you know, that he might, you know, that he's been complicit in his words that he has spoke leading up to 21st of February 1965. He also stated that I acknowledge that and regret that any words that I have said caused the loss of life of a human being. Now, he has stated that, so we have to get it from both sides here. Now, immediately thereafter, however, he named that the United States government as the real villains that had, you know, the zeal and the bitterness, you know, that basically, you know, caused that inside of the Nations of Islam ranks, because there was spies there from the FBI, informants, and et cetera. You know, we know that when Malcolm was murdered, Elijah Muhammad called him a hypocrite and said that Malcolm got just what he preached. You know, violence begat violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we know that Malcolm separated from the nation after learning about the corruption of the personal behavior and hypocrisy, as he was stated, you know, of Elijah Muhammad, who had engaged with the sexual relations with at least 9 teenage women in the organization. Some was underage, as it has been stated, and of course we know that Elijah Muhammad then organized a humiliating internal trial and suspended the women from membership after several had became pregnant. You know, so do you have any
what I would like to do? What I would like to do is go back.
All right.
In order to understand what happens in the present, you have to go back to the past. So I want to go back to the 1960s when Brother Malcolm was one of the most powerful speakers in America, and John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and Malcolm called it a case of chickens come home to roost, which was correct, but Mr. Muhammad gave Malcolm and all the ministers strict orders to don't say anything about the assassination of President Kennedy. One of those reasons was we know how crazy white folks can get over their heroes and leaders. So Mr. Muhammad, from what I was told by other brothers in the Nation of Islam, wanted to protect the brothers and sisters that's on the street from any violence from the white kind. So, given that order, I was at the Manhattan Center. Like I said, brother, you there?
Yes, we here, brother, big man. We
okay,
here.
I heard a little. I was at the Manhattan Center.
Oh, no,
when
you
Malcolm,
know, everybody else is, you know, others are listening.
I was
too.
At Manhattan Center when Malcolm gave that speech. And he got through the speech without mentioning one thing about the assassination of Kennedy until the question and answer period came up and a reporter, a white reporter in the audience named Handler, he asked Malcolm what he thought about the assassination of Kennedy, and then that's when Malcolm went into the chickens coming home to roost. In my hand, right now, I have the autobiography of Malcolm X, and the gentleman that, let me make sure, the gentleman that does the introduction, his name is Handler, too. The same guy that asked Malcolm X about the assassination of Kennedy had something to do with the autobiography of Malcolm X. Now, everything Malcolm said about chickens coming home to roost, I believe he was correct. The only thing was he was given an order. And when you're given an order, when you're in an organization, you have to follow. Unfortunately, a lot of us who never been in an organization don't know how an organization is run. We get very emotional. And that's one of the things I have many takes showing Brother Malcolm debating cool, calm, and collected. So, he disobeyed an order. All right. Some might say, well, he was telling the truth. He was telling the truth.
Right.
But when you're in an organization, it's not just one man.
That's
you know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right.
So he was suspended, to my knowledge, for 90 days.
Right.
And he was told not to say anything to the press. Muhammad Ali invited him down to Florida. And I saw the newspaper. Brother Malcolm was still talking, and the newspaper reporters were filming. Then he came back to New York, and he had a press conference at the UN. So, what I'm saying is that I got to get back to that. When you're given an order, see, the thing about Malcolm that a lot of people don't understand, Malcolm put his brother out the Nation of Islam for not doing right.
Right. As well as also, allegedly he put out Clarence 13X too, who was
he put out
law.
Clarence 13X.
Right.
See, so when you get emotional and don't think and don't understand history, don't know how to go back, you just know about what's happened in 2013, but you don't know what happened in 1965. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'm laying all this stuff out for the people that are listening to try to understand what I'm trying to get at.
Right. Let me say this too, brother, big man, is that we know that
again?
He's also that we know that Malcolm was often heard to say that you do not air dirty laundry before the world or before the public. But here he was, you know, doing the same
right.
thing. So
he went against what he spoke about. He went, and this is, you sent me a tape with some Malcolm X interviews on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Malcolm said that if someone would have come to me and told me about Elijah Muhammad, he said, I would have killed them myself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a key player. You named John Ali.
Right.
You didn't name Raymond Sharif.
Right.
You didn't name Elijah Muhammad Jr.
Right. Well, I'm gonna
and
get to
a
them.
Key player.
I was going to get to them.
Is Wallace. A key player is
Wallace
D. Muhammad.
Right.
See, when we talk about, when some people talk about Farrakhan being involved in the assassination of Malcolm X and what he gained, a lot of people don't understand, because I was in Harlem at that time. After the assassination of Malcolm X, Farrakhan did get promoted to a position, but that position was always watched upon because the people who promoted him to that position, and I'm not talking about Elijah Muhammad, I'm talking about when Elijah Muhammad died in 1974,
right,
when Wallace took over,
right.
Wallace kept a close eye on Farrakhan because he didn't want another Malcolm X.
That's right.
He moved Farrakhan from New York to Chicago to keep an eye on Farrakhan, and it was Wallace D. Muhammad who told Malcolm X that his father was having sex with these young secretaries.
He sure did.
And when Malcolm X
was
assassinated,
mm-hmm.
when the Muslims had their Savior's Day, Wallace Muhammad was on his knees begging to come back into the Nation of Islam.
Right, after the third time of being expelled. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I truly believe that Brother Malcolm, and this might sound rough, was conned by Wallace Muhammad.
Right.
Thinking
right.
that Wallace Muhammad was going to stick with him and other people. That's why Malcolm told Minister Farrakhan, or Louis Farrakhan at that time, about what he believed that Mr. Muhammad was doing. And God bless Gil Noble. Gil Noble got the tapes, brother. Gil Noble got a tape called The Death of Our Warriors, where Malcolm is damn near on his knees begging to come back into the Nation of Islam. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Charles Kenyatta in his house, if Elijah Muhammad would have told Malcolm X to come back into the Nation of Islam, Malcolm would have done it. See, a lot of people don't understand one thing. Malcolm had a father, but his father was killed
right.
at a young age.
That's right.
When Malcolm's father was killed, Malcolm was a young boy.
Right. He was killed by the KKK on the railroad track.
Right.
Right.
And when we get to the assassination of Malcolm X, I'm going to try to let the public understand that the government has been following the bloodline of the Malcolm X family for years and years and years.
That's right.
And to this day, the daughters, the grandsons, the nieces
yep.
are always under surveillance, because they are afraid of that bloodline.
Right. That's right.
I don't know whether you know it or not, but Malcolm X's grandson was arrested by the FBI.
The same day that the Betty and Coretta movie comes on Lifetime TV or channel.
Brother, nothing happens by coincidence.
That's right. And it was a week and a half prior to Malcolm's assassination date, which is tomorrow,
right.
February the 21st.
In February, every year, February, they bring up something. They don't have Mike. And unfortunately, some of the sisters or the daughters, and I got to say, I can't hold my tongue. I got to say it. Some of the daughters of Malcolm X used to call Mike Wallace Uncle Mike.
Uncle Mike, right.
I was at Betty Shabazz's funeral. And when the people started booing Rudolph Giuliani, Malcolm's oldest daughter told them to stop booing Giuliani.
Mm.
So when you tell me that, not when you tell me, but when you say that one of Malcolm X's daughter says that Farrakhan mm-hmm. was involved, I always say that how come he's not under arrest?
Right.
Now, you have the book, I think, called The Rise and Fall of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
That's right.
Where it has the five names
right.
of the people who really assassinated Malcolm X.
Right, exactly. As a matter of fact.
How come the government hasn't gone after them? See, now I'm just going to read this off where the audience can get this now. I have seven books that everybody should read. The American Dictionary of Certified Uncle Toms, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, even though it's called The Autobiography, Alex Haley was in cahoots with the government. A lot of the things that were supposed to be in the book was taken out of the book, and a lot of things were put in the book that Malcolm did not believe in.
Right, three chapters at least was taken out.
Right.
And
the
Manly. Right.
Right. The next book is Betty Shabazz, Surviving Malcolm X. The next book is Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention. Now, a lot of people are raising hell about that book.
Mm-hmm.
But all the people that's raising hell about it don't mention that Manly Marble mentions the people who really killed Malcolm X and got their pictures in the damn book.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the information, the index, this book, brother, has so much information that all that other crap that people are raising hell about, not that they shouldn't, but the book has so much good information. You who have computers, if you would go into this book and tap some of this stuff out, you would go to New Jersey and hunt. If that nigga really did it, you would hunt that nigga down. Nobody's saying they're having all these book parties and things and talking about the book is bad, but nobody's saying, look here, Manly Marble says that this guy is one of the guys that really shot Malcolm X. Dick Gregory said it. I got a newspaper article with the guy's picture. So, if you don't know your history, brother, you repeat it. Minister Farrakhan, when he broke away from Wallace D. Muhammad, what did they used to call it? The alien or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't you know Minister Farrakhan almost went crazy?
Yeah.
Minister Farrakhan grew an afro. I saw him walking down 125th Street smoking cigars.
Started smoking, right. Mm-hmm.
Smoking reefer.
Mm-hmm.
He went down. And the only thing that brought him back up was his belief in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Right.
And two or three brothers got with him. And the reason why Minister Farrakhan is alive today and Malcolm is not is because Farrakhan learned from Malcolm. Don't forget, Malcolm told Farrakhan in a car one day, they was in a car, and Malcolm told Farrakhan, brother, I wish I could be learning from your mistakes, but maybe you can learn from mine.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing Farrakhan did, which was so intelligent, he didn't say a damn thing until he got an army.
Right.
He kept his mouth closed.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had an army backing him up, then he came out swinging. Mm-hmm. See, people don't know Malcolm only had a few real brothers with him.
Right.
And eventually those brothers were locked up and put in jail. Those brothers' legs were broken. Some of those brothers were killed. So when Malcolm was assassinated at the Audubon Ballroom, most of them niggas was chumps that was guarding Malcolm. That's why they ran and jumped on the floor under the tables. Malcolm didn't have no damn bodyguards because they left the podium. It's just like a quarterback. What do you call the guys that guard the quarterback?
Right. Defensive linemen.
What's that again?
The defensive linemen.
Defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Malcolm didn't have no defensive linemen because they ran. They said they went to see what was happening in the back, but when you're on post, you don't leave your post.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if those guys didn't leave those posts, those other guys up front couldn't come up there and just shoot Malcolm like he was a damn duck or something like that at an amusement park.
That's right.
And another thing, I've been to the Audubon many times. I didn't know Malcolm on a personal level. I knew him just like I knew Dr. Ben or Dr. Clark or Steve Coakley, shaking their hand, talking to him. That's how I knew Malcolm in person at the age of 14 or 15 years old. But I've been in the Audubon. The men who assassinated Malcolm X, brother, knew that they could get away.
No doubt about it.
It was a setup, brother.
Right. Well, let's go into that, because we know that there was an affidavit sworn by Talbot Hale, who was known as Thomas Hagen, who was the one who actually shot Malcolm, who was caught with the .45 concerning his role in the assassination of Malcolm. And it was dated the 30th day of November 1977. And William, what's his name? Kinsler, he was the one who was like one of the head, I guess you could say, lawyers or attorneys in the country.
William Consular, right.
He had Thomas Hagen to actually do sworn affidavits. It was two of them. But it speaks of the surviving four of the Newark Five, as they was known: Benjamin Thomas, Leon Davis, Wilbert McKinley, and William Bradley. You know, these was all known as Benjamin X, Leonard X, William,
right.
Wilbur X, William X. You know, they was the assassins who pulled out the gauges or the Lugers and so forth and so on and shot Malcolm along with Thomas Hager. And they was actually expecting that Linwood X, a Linwood 25X also played a part. He was the observer during the
run
of the killing. So actually it was about six of them in total.
Right.
You know, and four of them are still living.
Yeah. And another thing, brother,
five of them are still living.
Yeah. Another thing you mentioned.
Thomas Hagen was just released out of prison not too long ago and walked the street of Harlem.
You know the sad thing about that? That he could come into a meeting, a so-called conscious meeting, and nobody would know him.
Yeah.
But I got his picture. I know what he looked like. But another thing is that we know about Gene Roberts.
Right.
Gene Roberts' wife was also an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent you a picture of a man called John Shabazz.
Right.
He went with Malcolm to King's Church down in Atlanta.
Right.
And I kind of knew him personally, too, and he turned out to be an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And Malcolm's organization was riddled
with agents.
With agents, not just Gene Roberts
and
a few other brothers. They did a job on Brother Malcolm. I'm looking at going back to the bloodline. All of Malcolm's brothers are dead. I think he had four brothers. All of them are dead.
Right.
His sister is dead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When they did a profile on Malcolm, going back to his father, isn't it ironic that the Klan set fire to Malcolm's father's house and Malcolm's house was burnt?
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm's father was assassinated. Malcolm was assassinated.
Right. Matter of fact, let's look at that too, Brother Big Man, because we know that people don't know that Malcolm's father was a Garveyite. He was
part
of the UNIA, the Universal
United
Nations.
And his mother was the secretary.
Right, was the secretary, right, United Negro Improvement Association under Marcus Messiah Garvey. Now, the interesting thing about that is that his father was also a Baptist minister.
That's true.
So there was these were not no punk preachers and pastors and reverends during this time period.
Well, it's just like Nat Turner.
Right.
That's why I get a kick out of some people when they talk about, the church and stuff like that. But then I find out that back in slavery time, a lot of the churches was the Underground Railroad. And I find out that in the 90s in Harlem, where they had First World, that was a church. The monsters wouldn't bury Malcolm or have the funeral. Charles Baptist Church let Malcolm be funeralized in a Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just talk and talk and talk and don't know, excuse the language, what the hell is going on right in front of you, brother.
That's right.
Like I'm down here now, and that's a whole story. But I've met and not only down here, but all my life, brother. When I was on the streets, I knew Muslims, Christians, Moors, Hebrews, niggas that didn't even believe in God. And I used to get along because I would listen and try to learn, And that's why when I look at a lot of these debates, man, I think it's like kindergarten school. Malcolm would debate. You never hear Malcolm calling the person that he's debating a nigger, calling him out of his name. So the language that we use today has even changed, and it's more emotional. You're not getting at the facts. You're getting emotional. And the reason why I spoke on those books, and I have another one, To Kill a Black Man by Lewis Lomax. And Temple Number 7 by Minister James 7X.
Right.
That's a good book, too.
Let me say this, Brother Big Man, about Lewis E. Lomax.
Right.
The interesting thing is that Carl Evans, who was the staff writer for the Washington Post, he researched more than 300,000 pages of declassified FBI and CIA documents for his book, which that was called The Judas Factor. He was, as well as also Lewis Lomax, was convinced, that Malcolm was set up, for the assassination by John Ali, who was an former for the intelligence agency or COINTELPRO, and that Malcolm had previously commented that Ali had been responsible for him being ousted from the NOI, because he was the one who controlled the newspaper as the secretary.
Information.
Right, the information. So Ali eventually rose to the position of national secretary of the NOI, which was actually the third ranking higher member behind Herbert Muhammad and Elijah Muhammad.
Yeah.
So we find out that Lewis Lomax was later killed in an automobile accident, supposedly due to brake failure. And we come to find out that Thomas Hagen, who is Thomas Hayer, actually met with John Ali the night before Malcolm's assassination. In Newark, New Jersey.
There are so many pieces to the puzzle. I want to read something. Percy Ellis Sutton.
Right.
Percy Ellis Sutton was born in San Antonio, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
His parents, Samuel J. Sutton and Lillian Sutton, were educators and philanthropists. Percy Sutton graduated from Phyllis Wheatley High School in San Antonio and subsequently attended Prairie View Agriculture and Medical College, Tuskegee Institute, and Hampton Institute, where he attempted to join the Army Air Force in Texas during World War II. He was rejected for reasons having to do with his racial background. He then successfully enlisted in the New York, as an intelligence officer with the Black 99 Fighter Squad. I had to get that straight because I read this, but I didn't read that he was an intelligence officer for the Black 99 Fighter Squadron serving in the Italian Mediterranean Theater. This is what I was talking about here. After the war, Sutton completed his education under the GI Bill, graduating from Brooklyn Law School in 1950. During the Korean War, Sutton re-entered the Air Force as an intelligence officer. Percy Sutton was an intelligence officer, and they're always bragging that Percy Sutton was Malcolm's lawyer. No wonder the damn government knew so much about Malcolm X.
Exactly. Now, Big Brother, Big Man, were you at the Betty Shabazz and the Minister Farrakhan, the New Beginning at the Apollo Theater, May 6, 1995?
I didn't make that, but I know about that.
Right. Now, Percy Sutton was there, and she gave, praise basically to Sutton for helping the family out during, after the death of Malcolm. Now, also, Betty was still in the mode of, somewhat blaming Farrakhan for the death of Malcolm. So there was some little slick things in which that was said about it, but when people go back and watch this YouTube clip or the video, DVD or whatever the case is, they would see something very interesting in which that she makes mention of. She makes mention of the fact that Malcolm came out of prison with four masks. Already under
his belt.
Right. And she said, of course, through his help, put a mosque throughout almost every state in the nation.
Right.
And so they have to, and she was saying that they need to recognize him for doing so and stop trying to, hide that history or take that away from him, because, that's the truth of the matter, so.
There's no doubt that Malcolm X helped build the Nation of Islam to being one of the most powerful organizations that there is in the black community. But at the same time, there was a Nation of Islam foundation that was there when Malcolm X was selling drugs and doing what he was doing in the street.
Right.
So you give credit where credit is due on both sides. If there wasn't a Nation of Islam, Malcolm wouldn't have had a platform to speak on.
No doubt.
And I always say it's great to have a black general. But when you got an army, you got to understand one thing. The man in the kitchen who's cooking, in my opinion, is just as important as the man that's up there speaking.
True indeed.
Because our army runs on a full stomach. The nurses, the doctors, the janitor, the brothers that set up the damn chairs, the brothers that stand on security are just as important. So there was an organization in place when Malcolm came on the scene.
Right. No doubt. No doubt about that. Let's get into this lineage thing, too, because, like you said, Malcolm's daughters, in particular, we know that Kabila was supposedly was set up by Michael
Fitzpatrick,
right, who was COINTELPRO, an FBI agent himself,
right,
in which that, he was known for several bombings around the world. in which that he's supposed to have been funded by Kabila, paid in order to assassinate Minister Farrakhan, in which that she later goes, you know, to jail. And, of course, based on Minister Farrakhan coming forth and not pressing charges, she was released. But, of course, within a matter of months, the same year of 1995, Betty Shabazz has to appear with Minister Farrakhan at that 1995 Apollo Theater meeting. So that was no coincidence. She had to do that based on the fact that had to show, you know, connection and show, you know, even though just 2 years prior to it was on a TV show, you know, like you said, they referred to Mike Wallace as Uncle Mike, as well as also on another TV show in which that they played a clip of Malcolm X of his assassination and Minister Farrakhan saying about, you know, if he was our traitor, then what hell, what business of it is yours? And she sits there, you know, like with a grin on her face, like, well, you know, this is, you know, do you believe that, you know, the question was asked, do you believe that Minister Farrakhan has something to do with it? And she said, yes, absolutely.
Right.
And then she goes on to say that based on that, you know, not only do she believe it, but that was a badge of honor among members of the Nation of Islam during that time period. Now, another important thing was that Malcolm's ex-daughter was arrested right after the time of Malcolm's assassination. This is another daughter. This is Malika. This is one of the twins. You know, I read the article earlier of Malek. Malek is her twin sister.
Mm-hmm.
This is Malika. Now, Malika, she was arrested right in North Carolina, Morris Hill, North Carolina. And she was the daughter, you know, arrested in, and she was held in North Carolina jail and could be basically, I guess, taken back to New York for to face charges on several outstanding warrants.
What was she arrested for?
For several outstanding warrants. That's
okay.
It. Outstanding warrants. They never said what the warrants were about or anything in the article. But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
That was Saturday, February the 19th. And guess when the article came out? February the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
The day, and that was 2011. That was just 2 years ago.
Right.
You know, so that's the ritual. February 21st, the day in which that Malcolm was assassinated, the day in which that article comes out, in which that they arrest Malcolm's daughter 2 years ago. And here it is, Kabila's son, you know, who is known as Malik Shabazz the second, or Malik Shabazz Jr., you know, he gets arrested a week and a half or so ago, you know, for trying to go to Iran.
Right.
And the FBI stops him the same day the movie Betty and Coretta comes out on Lifetime Channel.
Yeah. Nothing happens by accident.
Right.
I'm sitting here looking at Dr. Betty Shabazz's memorial services at Riverside Church, June 29th, 1997.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at the program. And the reason why I'm saying this is that if people don't know certain things, then they just assume, where they say acknowledgments, all these men got up and spoke about how much they cared for Betty Shabazz and how much they cared for the Malcolm X family. But if you know the history of these men, you say, damn, how did that happen?
Right.
Abe Beame, former mayor Abe Beame, New York City. Former mayor Ed Koch, New York City.
Right.
Former mayor Rudolph Giuliani, New York City. Alex Herman, U.S. Secretary of Labor. The only person here is Maxine Waters that might have had some real caring about the Shabazz family.
Right.
Robert H. Shuler, minister of the Crystal Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
How do these people get on the program and Dr. Ben is not on the program?
Right.
How do these people get on the program and Dr. Clark is not? Well, I think Dr. Clark was dead then. But how come Dr. J is not on the program?
No, because she passed in 97. John Henry Clark didn't pass until 98, a year later, if I'm not mistaken. So you're
okay,
right, brother, big man.
Yeah. So what was happening?
Right.
That's why when you had first started, you were saying one of Malcolm's daughters said that she knows Farrakhan did this.
Right.
You hanging out with crackers like this?
Right.
Rudolph Giuliani, Ed Koch, Bean.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that makes your, what's that word? Anyway, to me, credibility.
Right.
You can't be hanging out with these guys.
Right.
And telling me about Farrakhan. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Because I was one of the vendors on 125th Street when Rudolph Giuliani brought over 5,000 or 6,000 police, man.
Right.
And was whipping heads, locking brothers and sisters up, taking our livelihood away. And you're going to tell me some stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know.
Right.
You don't know.
Then you don't know and you can't show.
That's
right.
True.
So as we were saying, Dr. Betty Shabazz, she died in 1997, of course, due to burns sustained when her house was set on fire, allegedly
right.
by her grandson. Now, Brother Steve
right.
Coakley a tape actually on Betty Shabazz, and he called it actually an assassination of that bloodline once again, in which
okay.
he stated that there was three white assailants in which that Betty was making mention of, but yet it was never brought up.
Right.
You know, so I don't know if these three white individuals were actually, you know, COINTELPRO and, like you said, was spying on them, keeping tabs on them, or whatever the case may be. We know that Malik Shabazz, you know, young Malcolm, as they refer to him as, or Malcolm's grandson, was going back and forth, being that, you know, Kabila was not stable at the time and allegedly was on drugs. He was going back and forth, you know, from house to house, and eventually, you know, Grandma said, okay, well, he come and live with me. You know, and being disappointed in the fact that he couldn't see his grandmother based on what he has stated, you know,
right.
He was playing with fire, you know, and ended up, you know, setting the house on fire. And of course, she trying to save him. She walks through the fire and get 98% of her body burnt out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then dies weeks later within the hospital.
That's something else, ain't it?
Yeah, that is something else.
Yeah. When I was mentioning M.S. Handler, he does the introduction in the book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X,
right.
the same guy that asked Malcolm that question
right.
about
so
Kennedy's assassination.
That's
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Those in the audience, if they don't really have it, they should get that dictionary certified Uncle Tom's because they have a whole list of agents from the days of Marcus Garvey on up to what's happening now, who betrayed and set up, they name them. Just like Steve Coakley said, naming the names.
Right.
They name the names.
Right. Do you have that list, Brother Big Man, on you?
As we talk, I'm looking through it, and I'll find it in a minute.
All
but
right.
You can go on and let me find that spot.
All right. Well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to name some books also in which that they need to check out. You want to check out The Smoking Gun, The Malcolm X Files. It's not necessarily a book, but you can actually find that on the Internet. The Judas Factor by Carl Evans. Of course, you want to watch Betty and Coretta on Lifetime Channel. Check that
right.
out in order to
FBI Files.
Right. You also want the FBI Files. You want the Conspiracy to Plot, The Plot to Kill Malcolm X by Zach Kondo, in which that,
right.
you know, prior to Manning Marble's book probably was the most complete book on the subject. You want The Assassination of Malcolm X by Peter Goldman. You want, of course, articles from The Muhammad Speaks dating back to December 1964, in which that was an article by Louis Farrakhan. You want The Emerge magazine, March 1992, with the cover on The Nation of Islam. You know, so you definitely want these particular books. You know, or, you know, articles or whatever the case may be, files, you know, in order to definitely check out to add to your arsenal.
You got to read everything, brothers and sisters.
Right.
These movies, you know, Bobby Hemmett, Phil Valentine, Brother Daoud would always talk about these movies and not just movies. So you should go in there and with your pencil and pen and write things down because in the movie, there's a message. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No doubt about it. And another interesting point, too, for everyone is that there was FBI wiretaps, amongst others, of Chicago Temple number 2, New York Temple or Mosque number 7, Boston number Temple or Mosque 11, Philadelphia number 12, Newark, New Jersey number 25, you know, together with Jersey City, Patterson, and Plainville, these satellites, and Los Angeles number 27, telephone conversations along with clandestine recordings of speeches covering at least the period from 1962 to 1966, you know, so they knew, and guess what, they should be declassified and released to investigators, as these temples were notorious for their deprived and murderous attitude towards Malcolm X, you know, so, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. Now, we know that Newark Temple number 25 was the temple in which that these particular assassins left out from. So we definitely would need those recordings in order to find out what was being said around the time leading up to February the 21st, 1965, you know. So we, you know, there's just some things that we definitely have to definitely investigate even further. You know, there's another publication known as The Man Who Did Not Shoot Malcolm X. And of course, you know, there was two brothers who actually went to jail. Muhammad Abdul Azeed, who was known as Norman 3X Butler. And it says that besides becoming the second ranking official at the mosque number 7, which is also the former temple of Malcolm X, Minister Farrakhan, as well as also Dr. Khaled Muhammad, as well as also Ben Chavis, if I'm not mistaken, actually was over it too, in which that Farrakhan wanted, was stated that by Charles 37X or Kenyatta, in which that stated that Minister Farrakhan wanted Malcolm's spot. There is no question about it. He wanted Malcolm's spot. Now, he has said that, but that still doesn't go into the fact of everything in which that has been said. There still need to be more investigation. But it also says that Muhammad Abdul Azeed or Norman 3X Butler, he was actually paroled in 1985 after 20 years in prison, but also maintained that he had nothing to do with Malcolm's murder.
Right.
He was the chief of security and training for the sect within Nation Islam East Coast region, which included dozens of mosques from Maine to South Carolina. When he was the head or being appointed over the Mosque 7, he did state, Khalil said that, what a matter-of-fact irony. They gave me the star role, the man with the shotgun, the mastermind. All right, now, even though he said that he had nothing to do with the shooting of Malcolm, you know, at the Audubon, you know, ballroom, but when he gets out of prison, Minister Farrakhan puts him in a position to head the Mosque number 7. As you know, you was there during that time period in Harlem, Brother Big Man. What was your feelings about that, and what was the word or the consensus on the street?
Yeah. Well, the part that you were talking about, gave me the star role. I don't know about that part, but what I do know, because after he got that appointment, him and around 200 FOIs were on 125th Street, and they passed by my stand, and I took pictures. Unfortunately, I don't have some of those pictures now. He even shook my hand, right?
Right.
Now, that, to my knowledge, the only thing that I can say is that I think that he did 20-something years, right? And the other brother.
The other brother died
a couple of years ago.
Right, Thomas 15X Johnson.
Right.
Khalid Islam.
Right. Khalid Islam used to buy books from me.
Right.
And I've met both of them. That appointment was, to my knowledge, from a man that did 20 years and was innocent, number one. That's the ironic part, you know, like,
right.
If he was really, like this other nigga, Hagen,
if he was really
the killer and mm-hmm. he was appointed, then that would be a whole different thing.
Right.
In my eyesight. I finally found that page, and I just want to read something. This is out of the Certified Uncle Tom's, all the agents that were not only in America but around the world. It took hundreds of black-skinned sabotagers to operate the FBI's COINTELPRO operation. It says hundreds, but it was thousands.
Mm.
Which target for destruction every notable black leader and organization in the fight for racial justice. They infiltrated, surveilled, sabotaged, undermined black organizations at the behest of the greatest, now this is my words, the greatest white faggot in America, J. Edgar Hoover. For example, throughout the 1960s, between 60 and 70 Negro agents had infiltrated the Black Panther Party on behalf of the FBI. They were used in launching a series of illegal operations against the Panthers as part of a successful operation to neutralize. When you hear that word neutralize, that means kill.
Right.
Many other organizations were undermined and ultimately were destroyed by these black agents of repression, which made a lucrative career out of this most insidious form of Uncle Tomism.
Right.
Now, this is the part right here.
Right, let me say this.
Throughout Algeria, Kenya, and Tanzania, black agents posed as hotel operators, poets, journalists, mingled with Africans and black citizens, and filed their reports with the CIA headquarters. So preserverous was their poisonous presence in the motherland that in Accra, Ghana, signs were posted around the city that read, "Beware of Afro-Americans." Over 3,000 illegal operations worldwide, largely in the third world nations. The CIA has recruited willing Uncle Tom Negroes to carry out its deeds. Now, this is under Infiltrators, Agents, and Provocateurs. George
right.
Sams, Black Panther Party official, paid FBI informer, killed a party member. James A. Harrison, FBI code name, AT1387-S, became a controller of Martin Luther King's Southern Leadership Conference and supplied information to the FBI. William O'Neill, FBI infiltrator who became high official in the Black Panther Party, supplied floor plans for the police raid that killed Mark Clark and Fred Hampton and put drugs in Mark Clark's and Fred Hampton's drink.
Right, in the Kool-Aid.
And he received a total of $30,000 for his services, and they gave the nigga a bonus of $300. Now, I can go on. I don't want to take up too much time, but it's one more I'm going to read here. Gene Roberts, know about him and Malcolm.
Right, but he also he testified because he became also part of the New York 21. He testified.
Oh yeah, right.
So Gene Roberts
was first in the Nation of Islam. Then he got into Malcolm, and then he hooked up with the Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Roberts went from organization to organization.
Right, he was the super Negro COINTELPRO.
Right. Merrill McCullough.
Oh, yeah, we know
Memphis
him, Martin Luther
police
King.
Under, Memphis police undercover agent surveilling Martin Luther King was posing as an activist when the United States government murdered King. McCullough was on the damn balcony when King got shot.
Right, and actually was the one who made
the
point.
This is the point.
Mm-hmm.
Now he works for the CIA.
That's right.
The brothers and sisters need to get this book because there's so much information in it. You can go on, brother.
All right, all right. So, we definitely know that these individuals are part of it. We know the psychosis of it, black mentalism, in which that is also known as post-traumatic syndrome or mental side,
right.
Also known as the Willie Lynch syndrome. It goes by so many different names now. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, we keep coming up with another name every year, but it's called a sociopath.
Right.
You know, an individual who don't have any remorse or have any feelings about what they do. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
And is happy to do it. So these are psychopaths or sociopaths at their best. And we're talking about black
mm-hmm.
devils. You know?
Yeah.
These individuals are accepting, like you said, $30,000 and $300 bonus. Wow. Happy
right.
Negro Day for me. You know? So,
yeah.
You know, these are the type of people in which that don't mind selling you out for the crumbs at the master's table.
Mm. Yeah. Another thing is that we're talking about the assassination of Malcolm X, but this goes deeper than just Malcolm. Thousands of black men, women, and children have been murdered. I'm looking at the article on Geronimo Pratt, Elmer G. Pratt, 63, Jail Panther, dead.
Right.
Died in a... Africa, okay?
Right.
Now, only somebody who really knew this brother
mm-hmm.
knew whether the brother really had high blood pressure or was
right.
he sick. That's how you can kind of narrow these mysterious deaths down, because that brother was 63. I'm 66.
Right.
And that brother was in good health, exercise, and he was a military man. So he knew how to take care of himself, but... Never. Plus, he won $4.5 million from the federal government.
Right.
All that time that he spent in jail. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
That's right. Falsely
so,
spent in jail. That's
you
right.
never know. You never know, brother. You know, sisters.
Right.
Me and Sionetta did the last interview with Brother Barashango.
Right.
At Soul Brothers Boutique.
Right. Let me tell you this about Brother Barashango, because it was interesting, because we got a call. My teacher and I, we was in North Carolina at my bookstore, Cultural Freedom Bookstore, and this was January. I remember the day that it happened. This was like around January, the first week or so of January, and we got news. A call came through to Prince Ramesses Abel Bey or Prince Sultan Tupac Bey, in which that stated that Ishmael Barashango just passed.
Mm.
Now, this was before his actual passing date, Brother Big Man.
Ain't that something?
Now, this was the crazy thing, is that Ishmael Barashango, who they mixed him up with, was actually Jacob Carruthers. Now, I don't know how you make that mixed up, because Jacob Carruthers passed like around January that 2nd. But we get word of it, you know what I'm saying, a few days later, like around January the 5th. You know what I'm saying? That 5th or 6th, somewhere around there, of that, it was Ishmael Barashango. But guess what? Ishmael Barashango didn't pass until January the 14th.
Ain't that something?
And right before him, on January the 12th, my teacher passed.
Right. These things are not happening by coincidence. That's
no.
why I've told brothers, if I'm saying this jokingly, but I plan on being here many years. If they find me and I got alcohol or drugs in my system, you know that's a damn lie, because I don't drink and I don't take drugs.
That's right.
So I'm looking at how Brother Steve Coakley broke down the assassination of Tupac and Howard Washington, Biggie Smalls, and he would have done a great job on the assassination of Khalid Muhammad, but he was stopped. And now we have his mysterious death. And I had made a tape, and in the future people might want that tape. But I had, on the tape, at the end of the tape, I had called out for Brother Valentine to do a thorough investigation of the murder of Steve Coakley. But look like me and you might have to do that, brother. You hear me?
Yeah, definitely.
Hello?
Yes, we hear, brother, big man.
No, I said, did you hear what I just said?
I didn't hear that last part, that last sentence, what you saying about Steve Coakley.
I said that on the tape that I gave you, let you hold.
Right.
At the end of the tape, I had said I wanted Brother Valentine to do an investigation into the death of Steve Coakley.
Oh, got you.
I don't know whether he ever got that tape, but I said it looked like me and you might have to do that.
Right, right. Well, we can also add him in, because I talked to Brother Phil at least once or twice out of once a week or either every 2 weeks.
That tape that I let you hold, if you can make a copy.
I can get it to him.
On Steve Coakley and Gil Noble. And
right.
Then one more thing, Steve Coakley died the fourth month in the 11th day.
Right, 4/9/411, right.
Okay, now you break that down, brother.
Well, you know, 411, based on the phone, means information. When you call 411, you're trying to get information. So, of course, the information man was Brother Steve Coakley. And like you said,
and
Gil
Noble and Steve Coakley died the same month.
That's right, the same month.
So you
That's
got
right.
two of the baddest brothers who had the information. And I don't want to be spooky. You know, some people say, you paranoid. Brothers and sisters, if I wasn't paranoid, I wouldn't be here now. Because you always got to be watching your back, making sure that you're eating at the right places and nobody's dropping anything in your food or your drink. I got an article here, too.
Right.
Same civil rights leader photographer of Martin
yep.
Luther King, double as FBI agent, Ernest Withers.
Right, who was the photographer.
Ernest
the
Withers.
The
brother that took all them great pictures of Martin Luther King was
That's
being
right.
paid by the United States government in an FBI informer. So,
That's right.
don't tell me what a Negro won't do
yep.
for a pork chop and a piece of bacon.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, Brother Big Man, we got a question in the chat room. They want to know what's the name of that book with all them snitches in it.
Oh, The Dictionary of Certified Uncle Toms.
The Dictionary of Certified Uncle Toms.
This came out, this came out in, let me see the date. 1973.
Hmm.
That's why I say a lot of this information is not new. It's just
right.
that a lot of us don't read. So when we do get information, it seems like it's new.
That's right.
But it's a good book. It's over 400 pages.
Right.
Is that the only thing the person want to ask?
Yeah, that was that. But we have a call online here. We're going to go to area code 702. Area code 702, you're on the line. Peace.
Peace.
702? Area code 702, you're on the line. All right, maybe they just had their hand up, Brother Big Man. Let's go to
okay.
area code 314. Area code 314, you're on the line. This is Brother
okay,
L.
Okay, get scared now. Don't get scared on us.
Yes, right. Here go Brother L.
Brother L, what's up? Peace, God.
Peace,
God.
How you doing, Grand Sheik? How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, brother. I'm listening to you and the brother talking.
I thought I was already on the line, but I would kept, everything the brother was saying, Big Man was saying, I have been studying and investigating on since 92. And I can say he's really, really, really right on time with that.
No doubt about it.
Yes, sir.
No doubt
yes,
about
sir.
It.
Yes, sir. I can tell the brother definitely did his homework.
No doubt
well,
about
brother,
that.
I've been in the streets of Harlem since I was 13 years old.
Okay.
It's not too many people that I haven't met. You know, Dr. Ben, Malcolm Farrakhan, Dr. Jeffries, Brother Smalls, Kings, Queens. I mean, the big people, the little people, the winos, the drug addicts. Brother, I'm living in the South now, but I still love New York, and I plan on coming up there soon, you know, yeah.
Okay, what exactly made you leave New York?
What's that again?
What exactly made you leave New York?
Economics.
Okay, I got you. I understand. I heard about that in New York, too.
A studio costs $1,500.
Ooh. Yes, sir. I heard about New York and economics.
Yeah. I lived in New York 60 years, brother. You know, it had to be bad for me to leave.
Right, right. Mm.
Right, we have some questions here in the chat room, Brother Big Man. One of the questions is, why so many agents in the black organizations? What's your opinion on that? And as a matter of fact, it also says, are the teachings not as powerful as the dirty money in which they're receiving? So, you know, we know one of the things, you know, when you look at COINTELPRO, set up by Gabriel Hoover, you know, since the 1920s, he's been following so-called black organizations, you know, starting with Marcus Garvey,
right.
You know, the Morris Science Temple of America, you know, all up into the 60s, 50s and 60s with SNCC, SCLC, you know, the so-called Civil Rights Movement, RAM, Nation of Islam, the Black Panthers, you know, and et cetera, on and on and on. And, of course,
yeah.
We know that there's a memo in which that came out a month before the assassination of Martin Luther King, in which that stated that they feared the rise of a black messiah who could electrify
right.
and unify the masses.
Right.
So
another thing about that.
Right, so is that the reason why so many agents are in the black organizations? What's your thoughts on that?
Right, yeah. Another thing about that is that the government feared the civil rights organizations just as much as they feared the Black Panther Party, because you have to understand one thing, and Malcolm said it best. They don't care if you're a Muslim. They don't care if you're a Baptist, a Mason, a Episcopalian, as long as you're black. And they can't attend your organizations or they can't run your organizations. They have a problem with that, you know? So, one of the reasons I believe that there are so many agents, you have to go back in the history, slavery time. Harriet Tubman wanted to come back and free her husband. Don't you know her husband said, I ain't going nowhere. I like my master. Sometime when Harriet Tubman would be taking the brothers to the freedom, sometime they would want to go back, she had to pull out her gun and say,
that's
you ain't
right.
going nowhere.
Wow.
That's right.
Wow.
So that, we call them agents now, but back then they had another name for them, you know what I'm saying? And money, it was money. Sometimes, brother, and I'm not joking, sometimes they would sell out people out for a slab of bacon.
Yeah.
Man, that's that.
Negroes still selling us out. When they moved the vendors over on 25th Street, Virginia Fields, David Dinkins, Percy Sutton, Rango, Bill Perkins, Denny Farrow,
all
these people selling us out.
Right, all the building members at best. Because like what you just said is all of them, a majority of them are Boulay members, Brother Big Man. And you know what Brother Steve Copeland said about that. Everybody who knows Brother Steve, on four of them elbows right now. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it's time to bow that. So, Brother Big Man, what you think about the Boulay and then, you know, reconnecting that to Brother Steve Copeland and him revealing this so-called secret society of black men, you know, slash, you know, and their puppet women, you know, who act as the buffer between the grassroots movement and the so-called elite, and they themselves are called the Boulay or the Senior Par Five, which means the advisors to the kings.
Right.
Right. I was, if somebody say something here, I was listening when you, Big Man, was questioning Brother Dr. Aline about you were saying that you advising or asked Dr. Phil Valentine to investigate the murder or the investigation of Steve Coakley, but you said you seems like you have you and the brother Dr. Aline have to do the work yourself. What exactly
what
did
happened
you mean
was
that?
Yeah, what happened is that Brother Valentine, the tape, the DVD that I made is over 2 hours long, and Brother Valentine never got a copy.
Huh.
So I never heard anybody give a lecture or discussion on the death of Steve Coakley. So that's why I said, look like me and Brother Aline Bay is going to have to do that.
Okay.
That's why I said that.
Okay.
If Brother Phil Valentine does get that tape, maybe he all three of us can get involved and put our information together.
Okay.
And that's right. That's right. And also in the chat room, they made the statement that, just like you said, some of them sold out based on a slab of bacon. Well,
right.
You know, based on the Nation of Gods and the Earth, so the 5% teachings, it says that they like the devil because they give them nothing.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
Another thing, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our people, some of them might just not like you, might
what?
Not like what you look like, might
mm-hmm.
not, you
yeah,
know,
crazy.
I mean, now, I saw Malcolm X in the flesh.
Right.
We had reddish skin,
right.
He had red hair,
yeah.
And he
right.
had greenish eyes.
Right.
So, I got to tell the truth. When I saw the debate where Brother Polite
right.
said that Seti was light-skinned,
right.
I said to myself, I wonder what he would think about Malcolm X now.
Right.
So, that's what I mean, that some people hate you just because of the way you look.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Some of the worst niggas in the world are black as coal.
Right.
I've noticed that.
So you don't have to be light or if you light, that don't make that you're not a real person.
Right.
You, like I said, you can be black as coal and be one of the worst niggas that ever walked the earth. And that
right.
could be vice versa, too. Because when you look at Africa, all that killing, chopping
mm-hmm.
off a baby's arms and legs and heads, the Tutsis and that other tribe. I mean, all this division. I mean,
Hutus, right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like the vibe. It's almost like the devil don't even have to be there. We just on remote control killing each other. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's the miseducation of a Negro. We're hearing about Carter G. Woodson, Brother Big Man. That's exactly
that's
what
true.
You said.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Cool.
And another thing, I did research on, when I lived in Harlem, I used to go to Schomburg Library all the time. And when I moved down here, I got a book on Arthur Schomburg. That was one of Dr. Clark's teachers. And I read that he was friends with Marcus Garvey. Matter of fact, I got a picture of Arthur Schomburg standing right next to Marcus Garvey at a funeral.
That's right.
And then I read where Arthur Schomburg was a healthy man, you know, went to the dentist to get a tooth either pulled or looked at, and he went to the dentist, and maybe in a couple of days he was dead. Now, I'm 66. I'm just finding that out.
Right.
I'm just finding that out. So, and I'm a person that reads and studies and stuff like that. So there's so many mysterious deaths out here, brother, that when somebody tell you, man, you crazy, man, it ain't no conspiracy.
When yeah, I have Bobby Hemmett,
when Bobby Hemmett first came to New York, he was talking about the homeless. That you don't see as many homeless now because they're driving the homeless up. And they're doing experimentations on the homeless.
Right.
You know, if you're a so-called militant, you know, you might, oh, man, you crazy, man, you know. But I got an article here, February 28th, 2011, humans used in experiments. BioTexas panel will investigate past research in the number one experiment they were working on was the Tuskegee 1966 giving syphilis to the brothers in the penitentiary. That's why I tell all the brothers and sisters and young folks, stay out of these jails.
Stay out of them.
Because when you're in there, you can't eat what you want. You eat what they give you.
That's right.
And the medicine, whatever, if you got a headache, you think they're giving you bear aspirin? You got to drink water? Stay out of them jails. They gave
warehouses.
They gave smallpox blankets to the Native Americans, brothers and sisters.
Right.
That's right.
We forget.
Right, that's when
you
got to
be wary of these gifts. UNICEF sending food here and food there. And you wonder why now you got these colds that you can't get rid of and virus and flus and all this stuff that's going down. They're giving it to you.
No doubt. Right. Brother Bookman, let's get into Dr. Khalis Muhammad's death because, you know, we want to bring all of this together because we know that he's definitely one of the people who come in the image, you know, of Malcolm or Malik El-Shabazz.
Right.
And one of the things is that, matter of fact, his birthday was just, you know, a month ago, you know, January the 12th was Dr. Khalis' born day. You know,
right.
And we definitely want to add him into the mix. You know, what's your thoughts on his assassination? Because we want to get into also what Brother Steve Copley said about it, too.
When I heard about it, it hit me hard because Khalid was in Harlem all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When I had my stand on 125th Street, my book stand, Khalid, this is when he had his Rolls Royce. Khalid would stop his Rolls Royce in the middle of 125th Street and jump out and come to my book stand and hold up traffic for 10 or 15 minutes. And we would talk. Then he would jump back in. Khalid Muhammad was one of the boldest men, period, that I ever... Let me tell you a story first. On 125th Street, you had Mashaw's Bookstore, and that's where all the nationalists would speak, and Dr. Ben would speak, and Malcolm would speak. And one of the first times I heard Malcolm, he was talking about how this plane crashed in Texas, and it had all these white folks on it from Texas. And somebody handed him a note. And Malcolm said, I got a message from God. 125 devils just went down on an airplane. All praises due to Allah.
Wow.
That's what Malcolm said. And when I heard that, I said, wow, woo. Then, fast forward to, I think it was 1990 when I first heard Khalid Muhammad. And when I first heard Khalid Muhammad, I'm going to tell you what I said, just like I said. I said, damn. When I heard Khalid, I said, damn, man, who's that? Because I had never heard him before. And he was talking about the white woman. And like I said, Malcolm was bad, but Khalid's language was from the street. And from there, I would go to different lectures where Khalid would be, sometimes City College, Slave Theater in Brooklyn, and then they moved to the Dempsey Center in Harlem, New York. And that was right around the corner where I lived, so you know I was there. And Alton Maddox said himself that it was two people that would fill up the Dempsey Theater. One was Steve Coakley, and the other one was Khalid Muhammad. When they came into town, the Dempsey held, I think, 500 people, and people would be standing up. And Khalid would just blast them, you know?
Wow.
And when I heard Khalid was dead, and then I heard somebody say something about an aneurysm, I said, that ain't no damn aneurysm. And then I began to hear what they said happened. Him going to a Chinese restaurant. Him coming home, making love to his wife, ambush. Him getting sick.
Laying on the floor for 8 hours.
Her putting a pillow down. Him going to the bathroom, urinating on himself, defecating on himself. Now, if you ever saw Khalid Muhammad was one of the cleanest black men. No, one of the cleanest men I ever seen in my life. So for him to urinate on himself and defecate, his system was breaking down. But he was so strong that he lasted. He lasted and ambushed his wife. Put a pillow under his head, and she got back into the bed. And when a call was made, whoever got there, I think it was Hashim. And then Malik, they started Ambush had cleaned up with bleach.
Right.
One of my favorite programs on TV is CSI. And they say, don't touch the evidence. She starts splashing bleach everywhere.
Right.
When they got there, defecation and everything, Malik said he cut that out the rug, but the damn rug disappeared.
Exactly. That's what Steve said.
The blood disappeared. The person who had the blood, they lost the blood.
Yep.
We had a lecture at Soul Brothers Boutique, and Malik Zul Shabazz did show for that lecture. It was on the death of Khalid Muhammad, no holds barred.
It was called Malik Zul Shabazz in the Hot Seat.
Right.
Khalid Muhammad.
I brought a brother in who was a scientist on plants and stuff like that. And he knew about poisons, and he knew about blood. And his question to Malik was this. Brother Malik, the autopsy showed that they say there was no poison in Brother Khalid Muhammad's blood. He said, that's correct. Then the brother said, you remember when Brother Khalid got shot out in California and they took him to the hospital? Wouldn't you think that they would have taken blood from him there?
Right. Yeah, I would say yeah.
Malik said, where you going with this, brother? He said, where I'm going is that couldn't they have switched the blood from California, which was so-called good blood, and switched it here, and that's why we don't see any poison in the blood. Malik said, brother, are you out of your mind? This ain't no Twilight Zone and all this kind of stuff, all this spooky talk. But, brother, that's not spooky. The devil has fossils and bones from thousands and thousands of years ago. He had diseases and typhoids and plagues that he has under frozen temperatures, preserving all these things. What's so spooky, brother? And he talked to the brother so bad that the brother sat down and didn't say anything else. So I truly believe that Khalid Muhammad was murdered through poison.
Right.
Somebody that he know poisoned him.
No doubt about it.
I don't know who.
Right.
But it just fits all the other mysterious deaths. Don't forget that 9/11 came right behind Khalid's death. If Khalid would have been around, Khalid was in Harlem all the time. If Khalid would have been around, that would have been a war cry.
Right. Well,
somebody didn't want him around.
Right, let's get into this, too, because Dr. Khalid was working with Dr. Malachi York, working with Wesley Snipes, and working with Stevie Wonder. And it
all
comes to like about 400 acres of peace down in Edenton, Georgia. And it was getting ready to form their own town slash city. Now,
right.
Dr. Khalid is killed. Malachi York goes to jail. Wesley Snipes goes to jail. Stevie Wonder is off the map for over 10 years. All right, so we know that there definitely was a conspiracy in order to stop that from happening, you know, from forming our own town. You know, and that would mean having our own distribution, import and export. In other words, another so-called Black Wall Street would have came into existence right there in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that that had to be part of that scenario also, you know, because Wesley Snipes was going to provide the security team. He had a security force that he was going to work with. You know, Dr. Khalid, you know, would have offered his expertise in that, being that he was a former supreme captain of the FOI, you know.
Right.
As well
and
as
another
also,
thing, another thing is that Wesley Snipes had the finances to finance that stuff. See, having knowledge is one thing, but when you got knowledge and money, you're really dangerous then.
Exactly.
Go on, brother.
Right. So I know the first time I met Dr. Khalid was in 1993. This is right prior to him getting shot by James Edward Best, when he got shot in his leg and hit almost a million arteries, and he actually could have bled the guy. But we know that that within itself was a conspiracy because they always come with that long gunman thing, and the police actually open up the car door so he can get into his truck, you know, in order to get the weapons.
In which
he ended up shooting Dr. Khalid with, you know. So we know that this was definitely conspiracy. Steve Copeland does a whole thing on the first attempted assassination of Dr. Khalid back in 90, it was around 90, on the end of 93 going into 94. Now, I met Dr. Khalid. Matter of fact, at that lecture, it was in Greensboro, North Carolina, he came out front in order to greet everyone, to say peace to them, to shake their hand, and thank them for coming. I actually shook his hand and talked to him for a few minutes because one of his securities was one of my time brother, Salam Muhammad, who actually was his bodyguard or security for Minister Farrakhan and for Dr. Khalid.
Okay.
So, when I moved down to Atlanta, Georgia, Dr. Khalid was living down there in Atlanta, Georgia also, going back and forth between New York and, of course, Atlanta, Georgia at that time. I sat next to him at a Steve Copeland lecture when Steve was breaking down Dr. Khalid being excommunicated from the Nation of Islam, and this was around 96, 97. And it was right before he joined the Black Panthers, the New Black Panthers, and he wanted to know what was our perspective on if he should even join or not. He wanted to hear from us if he should even join them or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because but he was so hurt about, you know, being excommunicated that he actually cried like a damn baby next to me.
Right.
So about being excommunicated. He was so dead. I mean, just here it is. You know, that happened, you know, in 95, you know, 94, 95, you know, 95 was when he got, I think, out from out of the Nation of Islam. But here it was, 2 years later, he was still massively hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, crying, like, you know, like almost like a baby. Tears just
flowing, right.
You know, everywhere. As
he was for real.
About, right, as he spoke about him and his, how much hurt, you know, and how Minister Farrakhan can meet with these hula-ass Negroes, these shuffling and jiving-ass Negroes, you know, such as Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and Benjamin Chavis, you know, and actually put Benjamin Chavis in the Nation of Islam as Benjamin Muhammad and actually put him over Mosque number 7, which was actually his former mosque.
Right.
You know, so all of this was taking place, and so the man was hurt. You know, I met Dr. Khaled. I was with Dr. Khaled again, you know, at another Steve Coakley lecture. It was on Clark Atlanta University. And I walked past him. I didn't even recognize him. And he eyeballed me so damn hard, I had to turn around and say, who the hell is eyeballing me this hard? And it was Dr. Khaled eyeballing me that damn hard. And I looked at him. I said, "Assalamu alaikum, brother." I didn't even realize it was you. And that's how I had to get him with a little grill, you know, and the eyeball stare from off of me. So the brother was powerful that day, and he turned around, you know, and eyeballed me so damn hard, you know, that I felt the energy pierce in the back of my head that I had to turn around and see who this was. And it was Dr. Powell, so the powerful, you know. And so when I first heard it, I knew it was some damn underhanded shit. And, of course, I heard Malik say that, well, you know, they was going to McDonald's and Burger King and Bell, Wendy's and all types of shit, you know, that day, you know, and went to a game. I think it was a basketball game or something. I can't remember what type of
But they
went to this and went to that, and, you know, Dr. You know, we would stop and hey, eating this and eating that, and Dr. Khaled had high blood pressure, and, you know, we tried to tell him not to eat and, you know, not to eat it and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, what was your thoughts on that, Brother Big Man, when you heard this same thing?
What's that again?
What was your thoughts on that when you heard that same explanation or same information coming from Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz?
Like I said, I tell you the truth. If it wasn't from Malik, when I heard what they say happened, that's why automatically my mind went to CSI because the facts are messed up, man. You don't, you know, all kind of crazy stuff. It was like the Keystone Cops. Now they guarding Khaled Muhammad's body when he's dead, when they should have been guarding him when he was alive.
That's right.
You know, and not to be funny, but when I heard Khaled's wife's last name, Ambush.
Ambush, yeah. You all
like,
that.
Say, for instance, you meet somebody. I meet a sister. And I said, my name is Brother Big Man.
Right.
I said, what's your name, sister? My name is Malika Ambush.
Right.
Automatically. Ambush? What kind of name is that?
So, exactly.
Names are powerful. Am I right or wrong, brother?
Well, you know, no doubt. And even working for the Jews is even more powerful, Brother Big Man.
Right.
Because we thought that.
And when you look in the dictionary and look up the word ambush.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's heavy, brother. So
it is.
This sister had something that Khaled really, I'm looking for choice words. The personality, she was a good-looking woman, and Khaled was a single man, and Khaled was a man. He likes sisters. So when he met this sister, he had to like her very much because he got married in Egypt. I think if this is true, Bala Shango married Khalid and Ambush.
Right.
That would have been one of the biggest weddings in Harlem or New York. So I don't know why they had it in Egypt and why it was so mysterious. You know, nobody didn't know nothing until, boom.
They came back, right.
So, this is a good point. And I'm not lying on the brother, but Hashim is the one that introduced Ambush to Khalid Muhammad.
Dr. Khalid. That's right.
See, if you don't know these things, why are you talking about that brother like that? No, this is the truth. And like they say, the truth shall set you free.
Right.
No doubt. Now, we also want to add into that, too, Brother Big Man, is the fact that when we get back to Ishmael Shango, Reverend Ishmael Shango, as well as also Dr. Khalid, like I said, what was phenomenal is that my teacher, Prince Ramesses Nebukadnezar, who was actually the crown prince of the Empire Watch Store, Dr. Demonia under the Empress, who was given that title June 7th, 1999, right before the raid on the property of the Empress in 2000. Now, what was interesting is that him and Dr. Khalid was actually members of the Nation of Islam at the same time, and him and Dr. Khalid knew each other. And actually, he was at the bedside the day when Dr. Khalid, when they put the plug on Dr. Khalid.
Mm.
Now, the interesting part is the fact is that he died on Dr. Khalid's born day, January 4th, 2004. So that's no coincidence. He was dead the day when Dr. Khalid passed, and he passed on the day Dr. Khalid's born day.
Ain't that something?
Wow. So that shows the connection, or I mean, it shows conspiracy, like you say.
Right.
Because I know my teacher, he just came back from Charlotte, you know, a matter of days prior to that. And I was in New York, during my first, DVD, really, up there in New York. You know, it was like that Apollo up there, that weekend. And I was up there in New York, January the 10th and 11th, that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
During with Shabazz, Brother Shabazz.
Right.
During my first, lecture called the Sherman Healers.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I get back, within less than half an hour, Prince Bay calls me and my wife, I'm out the kitchen. He said, Aline. And I run out the kitchen, and he said, I think I'm having a heart attack. Call 911. So, so we call 911.
Huh.
And they take so long to get there, Brother Big Man. And then when they come, they walk in. So I'm out there saying, God damn it, who your motherfucking ass is? Who your goddamn ass is right now, God damn it. And I'm yelling like a damn, like a sailor or like a damn, I'm talking like a damn sergeant in the military, at them. And they finally run, and they get them, And then they play like they trying to save them, because they had the, ambulance put up, not too far in front of the store. And so here they are working on them, and we looking at them, but they're only working on them when we look at them. It was a whole lot of strange things going on time. And like I said, Ishmael Shango dies 2 days after Prince Ramesses Nebukadnezar, brother. January 14th. That is no coincidence. There's a lot of things going on. Like I said, Jacob Carruthers died a week and a half before both of them brothers passed on January 14th. A lot of strange things, brother. And like you said, we definitely have to, that's what we do on these shows, to make sure that people understand and understand, what's going on, in the community, with people who actually knew these people. Who shook their hands. Let's talk about how you first met Brother Steve Coakley. And I'll speak about my experience with him also, brother, before we get off of here.
Well, at that time, we didn't even sell videotapes, and it wasn't no DVDs. We used to sell audio tapes. And on 125th Street, I had a large book stand, and I used to sell audio tapes. I don't even know where I got this audio tape of Steve Coakley from, but somebody gave me the tape. I had never heard of the man before, Steve Coakley. So I put the tape in, and I started listening, and he started breaking down this organization called the Play.
the gatekeepers, advisors to the king, and secret societies, and I got another tape. So I was playing the tape on my boombox, and people come and say, "Who's that?" I said, "Steve Coakley." And we were selling the audio for $5, so I would sell them. And after a while, this guy, Steve Coakley, started attracting attention in Harlem because people would ride up and jump out their cars. "So you got in that Steve Coakley?" And I was selling the tapes. And after a while, I had saturated the conscious community with Steve Coakley tapes. And then I heard that Steve Coakley was coming down. He was coming to the Slave Theater in Brooklyn. So I had a small tape recorder that I would tape lectures. So I gathered up my tape recorder and went to Brooklyn. I went up to the front and got by one of them big speakers where I could get a good sound. And sure enough, there goes Steve Coakley. Alton Maddox had brought Steve Coakley to Brooklyn. And about an hour into his speech, he said something that froze me. He said, "I want Brother Big Man." Now, we had never met, but the word had gotten back that I was selling his tape. Because when you buy a tape, they say, "Where do you get it?" "I got it from Brother Big Man." So he said, "I want Brother Big Man." There's over 500 people in the Slave Theater that night. "I want Brother Big Man to give Steve Coakley his cut of the tapes that he'd been selling." And everybody looked at me. And he went on and on. And I said to myself, "I ain't going nowhere. I'm going to take it. I'm going to be a man. I'm going to take it."
That's right.
And the only thing I said, "Brother Steve, when the lecture's over, I'd like to meet you in the back." So then he got off of me and went on to the subject. And after the lecture, I waited till he finished. And he came up, tall, tall brother. I shook his hand and we hugged. Steve Coakley was rough, but he was also gentle.
He sure was.
I shook his hand and I said, "Brother, the information, brother, that you have is so important that I had to make tapes and copies and let the people hear what you had to say because they never heard of this before." He said, "Yeah, brother, I understand that." And I reached in my pocket. I think I gave him $50. And then he said, "Brother, from now on, if you want tapes, here's my number. And as time goes on, you can get the tapes wholesale from me, and you'll be one of my official sellers of Steve Coakley tapes." And every time Steve came into town, I had a little envelope for Brother Steve Coakley. And from there, we went from being business partners to really brothers. And
that's right.
I want somebody to speak on that brother because that brother laid down some information and he was sincere. You know, he was sincere. And I forgot who even told me that Steve Coakley was dead because I was still calling his number and his voice was on his answer machine, so I just figured he was busy. But when he came to New York, me and the brothers would follow him, and we even went to D.C. one time to hook up when he was doing lectures there. Even the brothers that had the Good Life and all these brothers who he did lectures, I didn't even hear them say nothing about Steve Coakley.
Right, we did it on the radio show, Brother Big Man. Matter of fact, we dedicated a show to him. As a matter of fact, we dedicated several shows to him over the last year.
I like to get. If you got a copy, I like to get a copy of those. You know, like because
I was mad. I tell you the truth, like, even in New York, as much as I love Brother Alton, they tell me, I don't even know if he mentioned it or they mentioned it. It was just hard. Not too many things could break my heart. But when you mess with somebody that I care about, then that's a different story. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Let me see.
You
this
can be out on the street, brother, for so long.
And
get like concrete, you know?
Right. Everyone in the chat room, please call in. The number is 626-414-3535. For those who are in the chat room, once again, call in 626-414-3535 if you want to continue listening to this, because we're going to 11 tonight, so we're going for another hour or so. Please, for those who want to continue listening, please call in. As a matter of fact, I want to say this too about Brother Steve Copley, that I first met him in 95 at Clark University down in Atlanta, Georgia, at the AU. And here I was listening to him speak and break this information down for the first time personally. Now, I think I've seen a videotape in 94 of Brother Steve, you know, maybe 93, 94. I actually seen a videotape of him, but I did not get a chance to meet him until 95.
Mm-hmm.
And he dropped it. I mean, just dropped it. And, you know, I had to walk up to him at the end and just shake his hand and just tell him how impressed I was with the information. Because at the time, we were studying hard the Illuminati information, and we were studying who was the members of the CFR, the council, which is Council for Foreign Relations.
Right.
We were studying all this information, and Steve come in, and he just put all the pieces on the pieces together and all the dots, you know, together, you know, for us. You know, we were like, you know, in awe. Was like, yo, that's what I'm talking about. That's researching, you know. And, you know, and that's, you know, and I knew Steve and called him a few times. Matter of fact, in 2004, actually was with Steve. My wife and I was with Steve basically all day long. It was back in May of 2004,
mm-hmm.
right after my teacher passed. And me and Brother Steve was chilling. We was in Los Angeles area, and we went to the Black Museum there, and we was looking around, and he was taking me through, you know, the areas in which I was conscious, you know, my wife and I, and we talked all day long, you know, from that afternoon over until, I mean, like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
He broke, you know, just broke down information to me, things in which that, you know, he never wanted to say, you know, publicly. You know, I know about it because he told me.
Right.
You know, as far as, like, some of the connections with the Illuminati, like, who was funding certain organizations in the community and how they were being funded by the Illuminati.
Right.
You know, by these particular groups. You know, I mean, groups in which we think is so militant or so much have our back.
Right.
You know, come to find out that they're being funded. You know,
right.
So Steve was breaking that information down. As well as also, you know, a week and a half before he passed, I talked to him on the phone. I was, I sent him some money, and you know,
right.
because at the time Steve was going through some hard times because he just got out of the hospital, which he spoke about the fact how he don't even know how he got in the hospital.
Right.
And he spoke about the fact too, Brother Big Man, on that tape, him being with in a hotel room, you know, and next thing you know, he pitched out black, and he was in the hospital. I don't even know what happened. And he's in a coma, and next thing you know, he wakes up with, staples all the way down the middle of his chest and stomach.
37 staples.
37 staples, you know. And then, you know, doing what they did. He don't even know what they did, you know. So, you know, when I talked to him, which was several times within that two-week span, I talked to him at least 3 or 4 times within that two-week span, this, you know, see how he was doing, because I was trying to get him to know to come on the radio show, on this same radio show, and he was getting ready to give me, you know, a time and set up date and everything. And he talked about him being on the Nikki Lab show in another broadcast that day, you know, when I talked to him last. And so, you know, he told me certain things and I asked him, well, brother, how you feeling? He said, well, you know, of course I'm not up to par, but, you know, brother, they try to get me in there. I said, what you mean? He said, brother, I mean, they try to get me. They try to, you know, basically end my life. So, I mean, he told me this.
Yeah.
He told me You know, so
another thing, brother.
Right, so we're talking about actually doing an actual lecture, you know, on Brother Steve. I know from experience because I heard him say it. He told me personally what happened. You know, as much
right.
as he could remember. You know, as much as he could remember, which wasn't much. You know, but he was able to, you know, recall everything once he got out the hospital, once he woke up and everything like that. You
right.
know, but,
yeah.
you know, the fact that he mentioned a woman, he did not mention that part to me. So that would be interesting, you know, for people to get that DVD from Brother Big Man, or CD, excuse me, for Brother Big Man, or go to the Nikki Love Show and know that, that which is one of the last speeches by
right.
Brother Steve Coakley, and check that out, where he speaks about some woman came to the hotel room, in which that next thing he knows, he's blacked out in a coma in the hospital, waking up, I think it was like, what, 8 days later?
Oh, yeah. Another
know,
thing,
so,
Brother Lean, this is why it's so important to have at least one person that you can trust, because
right.
yes, sir.
I have a network now where if a brother or sister don't hear from me in a couple of days, they
right.
know something is up.
Right.
Right.
You've had brothers and sisters that died in their homes and decayed where you couldn't even identify the bodies because
mm-hmm.
no, there was no communication. You stop seeing a brother, you know, you might say, where's John at? But, you know, you don't go to knock on the door and try to find out what's up.
Right.
So I told some brothers and sisters in New York, to call in, now's the time. I want y'all to call in and ask some questions because a lot of times people give lectures, but they don't have a question and answer period.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the time to ask some questions, and
right.
the more you learn a lot more sometimes by the questions than the lecture because I can go back. I can go back in my mind. I remember. So I'm ready. I'm ready.
Okay, all
right, we're going to call, we're going to bring in area code 561. Area code 561, you're on the line. You have a question or comment? Come on in.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is Brother CPM Hotep from West Palm.
Hotep.
Brother Hotep. All right, now.
Yeah, I just had a question. The brother was just saying we have a question. It's a town. So I do. I have a question. Okay, Malcolm X, now knowing that the Quran was speaking about the different wives, this is what I heard. So why did he come in and start to investigate the different wives that the Honorable Elijah had?
Right, that came through when we have Elijah Muhammad's son, known as Wolf D. Muhammad, who actually put that bug in Malcolm's ear, in which that
right.
At the time it is said that he also was an FBI informant.
Right.
So he actually put that in his ear, in which that allegedly made Malcolm go forth, because Malcolm did question the fact that based on all the Quran. You have to, you know, that you have up to four wives and multiple concubines, you know, all right hand possessions, as it was called within
yeah.
the Quran. You know,
yeah.
so that would have been easy to bypass if that fact would have been put out there. But the fact
yeah.
that Elijah Muhammad told them to be monogamous and not deal with that type of Islam in the sense of the Arabized Islam, that made it tougher.
Yeah, but you know, the sad thing is this, is that I have a DVD, brother, where most of those sisters are with Farrakhan now. They are members of the Nation
yeah.
of Islam. The women that Malcolm said were abused or taken, not taken care of by Mr. Muhammad,
right.
those women are with Farrakhan and their sons and daughters. Are with Farrakhan. That's the ironic part of it, is that Sister Tiana, I think if I'm pronouncing him, Sister Tiana Muhammad. Her name was Evelyn.
Her name was Evelyn.
And in
right.
the book, Autobiography of Malcolm X, In other books, they say that Malcolm, before he met Betty, had liked her.
He did. Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I got to tell the truth. Here's Mr. Muhammad. I think he might have been in his 60s then, having relationships with a woman that Malcolm had eyes for at one time.
I've heard that.
That might bring in a conflict, too, of
an
older man. See, I got to tell the truth. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people don't even know about that.
No, I heard about that.
Right.
No, I heard about that, brother.
So, it's a lot of things, brother, that if you did a lecture in New York in particular, and you were talking like this, Negroes would want to kill you. Because they haven't gotten to the point where they can analyze and listen to the truth. They say they want, it's like that movie. You don't want the truth, you can't take the truth.
Yeah.
And that's what it's like, brother.
Yeah,
we're so used to listening to other stuff. That's why I tell everybody, read everything. They're telling people not to go see Django. Go see Django. Because there's some stuff in Django that's heavy.
Right.
Especially that part where this white guy tells this other slave master about Alexander Dumas. This cracker had a library and didn't even know that one of the books he had was written by a black man who not only wrote The Three Musketeers, but wrote The Man with the Iron Mask and The Count of Monte Cristo.
Exactly. Yes, sir.
I had read those books when I was 13 years old. So when people tell me, I wouldn't read that. Brother, sometime I'll buy a book for one page.
Yeah,
if that
too.
Page can prove the truth, I'll get it. Or buy it, Xerox it, and take it back to the store. And when I was in New York, I used to liberate books. Since they had taken everything from us, I used to get my reparations on the spot. So, brother, it's a lot of things. It's just like people don't want to talk about a couple of Malcolm's daughters being involved with Caucasians. They don't want to talk about that. Because they can't take the truth. They want the sweet stuff under the rug.
Right.
It's all right to talk about Mr. Muhammad, but it's not all right to talk about some of Malcolm's daughters going with white men. You can't talk about that.
Right.
So that's what I'm talking about. You should know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, sir,
and like my wife said, one of the reasons is because they seen black men kill their father right in front of them.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, of course, that was a form of self-hatred within itself, you know.
That's true,
you know,
that's
about,
true.
It's about the mistrust of the so-called black man,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying, to the black woman who had to see something like that, so horrific. You know, done to them. They were psychologically scarred. Even the ones in the room, you know, Malika and Malika. You know what I'm saying? They are psychologically scarred. You know.
When you go through that trauma of matter of fact, Betty was pregnant, so all that fear, all that trauma went inside those babies. And
exactly.
I'm not saying anything against Brother Malcolm's family. Just to be
right.
saying it. You know
right.
what I'm saying? But I understand.
Right.
I understand it, really.
I just believe
if you could talk about someone, then someone could talk about you. That's
right.
what I, you know, I remember how Malcolm used to call Dr. King a boy.
Right.
Uncle Tom, the Big Six and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so when
right.
someone would say something about Malcolm, I would want to fight when
right.
I was young. You know, hey, on the corner, on the 25th Street. But here's Malcolm talking about somebody else. So when you get when you get older and you're supposed to get wiser, if you could talk about my mama, I could talk about your mama.
Right. Well, I mean, Malcolm woke me up. It wasn't even in the physical. I got woke up through his autobiography.
Right. Right.
So did
and,
I. Yeah.
And my godmother's daughter kept telling me, you know, like I remind her of Malcolm, and I'm like, who? She kept saying Malcolm X. I'm like, who the hell got the last name X? Nobody got no last name. Is this a made up person that you're talking about? You know, and he's like, yo, you need to go to the library. So guess what? I went to the Schomburg Library, and guess just like you, Brother Big Man, I had to liberate myself too.
Right.
And one of them was the autobiography of Malcolm X, you know, along with the message to the black man and so forth and so on, in which I began studying at the age of 11, at 12. Because at 11, a female started telling me about some other information. You know, it was about Malcolm, but I didn't know anything about who he was. You know, I was, you know, at the time, about 2 years prior to that, I was in the third grade, and I was living in Coney Island at the time, and that was my first time even hearing about Malcolm. But they didn't really go into detail about who he was. So it went from, you know, went one ear and out the other until my godmother's daughter told me about him, you know, later on, you know, at the age of 12, in which that, you know, sparked my interest because she kept telling me over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and guess what? She was a heroin addict. But the fact was that she put me on, that saved my life.
Right.
You know, in the fact that I was, you know, I started studying the principles of what Malcolm stood for, which that no drugs, no smoking, no drinking, et cetera. You know, and that's what influenced me, was actually through Malcolm, you know, through the autobiography. So the thing is that that book, even though as lacking as it is, as much
information,
as many chapters was taken out, which was about 3 to 4 chapters,
right.
Essentially that book has saved hundreds and thousands of brothers and sisters.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
You know,
that's why I mean, that's what I mean, read everything. I have the original hardcover. The original hardcover was selling for, like, at that time, back in the 60s, for like $7. Hardcover, and it had pictures in it.
Right.
That's the original, had pictures in it.
Right.
And I'll tell anybody, read the autobiography of Malcolm X, but just know how to break it down. When you read anything, break it down and understand what you're reading. You can read, but if you don't understand what you're reading, you know, and that brings me to back to college, son,
right,
Farrah Gray, because
who actually was called Farrah Khan,
right,
Farrah Khan Muhammad,
right,
right?
And I picked up his book. I talked about Farrah Gray maybe 12 years ago.
Right.
And I think I'm the first person that showed him shaking hands with Bill Clinton in the White House.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And
right.
That was when Khalid Muhammad was alive.
Right.
Now, how he did that, I don't know. But he's in the White House shaking hands with Bill Clinton. And in the book called The Millionaire, he mentions his father, but he doesn't mention by name. He just says he's a good speaker, you know. When Khalid was murdered, Khalid had a brownstone on Stryver's Row that was worth over $500,000.
Right.
And Farrah Gray got his cut out of that. He says in his book that he was a millionaire at a young age.
By the age of 15, right.
Right. Then why did people have to take up money for Khalid's funeral? You know what I'm saying? Why was the Black Panther Party asking for money
Right.
For college, when you got a son who says he's a millionaire.
Right.
And this is the spooky part. Don't tell me the white newspapers and magazines and reporters don't know he's Khalid Muhammad's son.
Well,
why they're not exposing that, I don't know.
Exactly.
Maybe they're waiting for the right time.
Well, that's waiting for the right time if he go out of hand, if he gets out of hand, Brother Big Man.
Okay.
Right. You know how that is. You know, roulette attendance, you know what I'm saying, is that they have to get something on you, you know, just in case if you get out of hand, just like Martin got out of hand. You know,
right.
Martin started talking about the Poor People campaign, started talking about, you know, Vietnam and how the war should be stopped and how the Vietnamese never called us niggas and so forth and so on. And here goes Martin saying these types of things, the same things in which that, you know, Muhammad Ali was saying, you know. And so this thing, you know, became real big. And so it was against the war. It was anti-war. And so that was against the United States foreign policy.
Right.
And that also was one of the dilemmas in which that the United States had, in particular of the fact that, you know, Edgar Hoover wanted to, you know, get rid of Martin Luther King, you know, because he aspired to be one of those Black messiahs, as you know, they mentioned
right.
within that a month before, in which I was COINTELPRO.
It's just like that film that they had on King's wife and Malcolm's wife.
Right, Betty and Coretta.
There
right.
was some information in that was good too.
Right.
That's why I always say you got to watch everything.
Mm-hmm.
That showed how. Betty was telling Malcolm that when the house got bombed, she thought he was going to stay with the family because
right.
somebody had just tried to kill us. Malcolm said, "I'm going to Detroit. I got to do a lecture."
Right,
and
like
the reason why he was so dedicated,
right,
and he thought that the brothers would take care of his family while he was on this mission. That's why I know. He wasn't playing. He was for real. Because
right,
the average man,
oh, no
if
doubt.
Your house had just got bombed and your family was in the house, you would have stayed there with your family. But he was so dedicated that he went to Detroit to give that lecture.
Right. Now, that goes back to what you were saying about Captain Raymond Sharif and also Elijah Muhammad Jr.
Right.
Being the ones who actually commend Joe's assailants to bomb Malcolm's home.
Mm.
It was the Nation of Islam property, a house, but Malcolm was staying there as one
right.
of the top ministers or being the top national spokesman for the Nation of Islam at the time.
Right, right, right.
You know, so it was actually Captain Raymond Sharif along with Elijah Muhammad Jr., in which that is allegedly stated to have told those assailants to bomb that house.
Mm. Another thing,
because you mentioned them earlier about Raymond Sharif, and you made
right.
mention of Elijah Muhammad Jr. earlier. So, what information that you have on that? And we're gonna have to get ready to end after this last question because I got a half an hour that I have to, a few minutes or so I have to bring the sister in order to break down this other information. But go ahead, Brother Big Man.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say one thing is that the Audubon Ballroom was a place that anybody could rent.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a night with the FOI at the Audubon Ballroom, and that's when, to my knowledge, I think Elijah Muhammad Jr. and John Ali visited New York at that particular time. And when you rent a place, you can just walk all over and know where the exits are, where the bathroom is at, and how to get around, how to get in, and how to get out.
That's
so
right.
I truly believe that there were agents in the Nation of Islam, whether they were working for the government or the government itself, because all you got to do is put a bow tie on a black man and have him say, "Assalamu alaikum," and you think he's a Muslim.
And that's it.
So it was, see, people could be working together and not knowing they're working together.
True.
That's what they call free agents.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
so, it's a puzzle, brother, because the reason why it's a puzzle, a lot of the people that know what really happened are dead.
Right.
And the ones that are here now are scared to talk about it.
Sure.
Captain Joseph was in the process of writing a book.
Sure.
He gets a heart attack all of a sudden.
Huh.
Right.
Wow.
When you begin to start writing these books, brother, these books, you know, William Cooper, Manly Marble.
Mm-hmm.
Manly Marble didn't even see his damn book get on the stands. He was dead.
He sure did. Right.
Well, he did.
So, it's heavy, brother, and it's going to get heavier because as long as there's a bloodline of Malcolm X, his grandson, somebody need to get him, a wise man need to get him on the side and let him really study his grandfather, how his grandfather would answer questions. Because when you read this report, it was saying that while speaking out about the murder of Trayvon Martin, Shabazz said there are hundreds of black Americans who are murdered in the United States every year with impunity, and police officers serve no time.
Yes,
they always get off.
Yes, sir.
Shabazz said that minorities will always be at the bottom, and added, we should take down the system. This is what they said. He said, we should take down the system completely and set up a new system of our own. That's revolution. And the way they got
right.
the Patriot Act now, they can
right.
take your words and use your words against you. Just
right.
like I said, even though Minister Malcolm X was telling the truth about Kennedy and the chickens that come home to roost, that what his enemies used to bring him down. So
Amen.
I think young Malcolm needs a circle of elders. Because when you're young, you really don't care. You know, when I was like 20 years old, man, I didn't think bullets could stop me. You know what I'm saying? But
right.
I know now they can. You know what I'm saying? But
right.
The picture I have of the young brother, just put some glasses on and he looks just like Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you were saying about people want to call in or what?
Yeah, I have to go to the phone line because we have another guest on which that's coming on and which that's going to be coming
okay.
on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't I'll leave you with this.
If you want to stay on, Brother Big Man, you can. I think we might have one caller here. Hold on. Area code 702. Area code 702, you're on the line.
That 702 you called out there?
Greetings, peace.
Peace.
Much love
yes.
to you. Much love to you, yes, sir.
Yeah, peace, boy.
Brother Aleem, how you doing there?
You doing well, brother.
You know what? I love the topic tonight. It's Black History Month. I have a very serious question to ask you about. Now, I'm in a whole
yep.
other town right now. Now,
mm-hmm.
in a professional environment, can you hear me clear?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we can.
In a professional environment, let's just say you got a cool nigga that's supervising. Now, if he comes out his mouth derogatory towards black folks, and the majority of the people in that environment is white, Mexican, and Asian, just a couple of black folks, but he's saying something derogatory about the black race. This is why black people do this. That's what's wrong with black people. Do I have grounds to file a lawsuit?
Yes. Did you try pulling him to the side in order to talk to him about his coonery?
The coonery that he has is so deeply embedded that he's, because he's so embedded in the Christianity realm to where it's not going to even, it's no point.
I got you. Yeah, so you would have to file a discrimination lawsuit against the brother as well as the fact of the company itself, in which that have him hired, because that is a form of discrimination. And, you know, of course, if you heard it, you was eyewitness to it, then, of course, you can detail it within an affidavit, which is known as a complaint, in which that you have filed first with the Human Resource Department, and then you can actually take it to, you know, into the civil side at the federal level, starting with also another complaint filed there if you choose to. So it depends on the method in which that you want to use. Then you have to get into the civil rights violations, Title 42, also 1983, 1985, et cetera. So, you know, also dealing with, dealing with that particular discrimination, you know, from the brother. So that's definitely what you can do.
Okay, now this is the flip side of it. Now we are men amongst men, right? So we talk about different things, but I'm not the one that's employed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a situation to where he's the only one that's employed by this company. You know, it's a learning process that we're going through. He's the one that's employed.
Wow.
Right, well,
so he's the one that really has an influence on everybody that's listening to what he's saying. Now, men amongst men, we talk about women a certain way. You know, we do different things, but to come out amongst your own race and for there to be such a small amount of people that are your race amongst everybody else, and you come out your mouth this way, you belittling who I am.
Right. Well, you can definitely tell the individual, you know, if you're going to file, like for example, you're going to file a lawsuit, brother, it had to start with first with a complaint about what you heard and what you eyewitnessed. You know, and like I said, you have to file it with that company, Human Resource Department, in order to put them on notice that this could possibly lead to a lawsuit based on the individual's discrimination towards you and towards your people, whatever the case may be. So it actually deals with a form of self-hatred, you know, and you have to detail the self-hatred factor also for them in the complaint, you know, whether it's going to be starting at the Human Resource Department or whether it goes further to the federal government. But
the chain of command. I have to go through the chain of command.
Yeah, you have to definitely do that, brother, so that you can have a paper trail.
Okay.
Yeah, without a paper
now,
trail.
Now, that right there might hinder my progress if I do it like that.
Well, I mean, brother, I mean, that's the only thing you can do if that's how you feel about it. Otherwise, you will have to do like Brother Big Man said, you have to keep your mouth closed, you know, about the situation.
Indeed.
You know,
so you think if I go through the chain of command and I try to keep my mouth closed, you don't think that it'll leak out a little bit and he might just disappear?
Well, that's the point of putting the complaint in and filing it with the Human Resource Department so that they can send it to the appropriate authorities or the ones who are high up within the company so that they can read it and then make that determination. Otherwise, you just playing with fire, you know, because that is so embedded within the brother, self-hatred is, and it's going to come up over and over again. But thank you, brother. We got to go because I got to bring the sister on.
Just ask for copies, though, right?
Yeah.
Ask for copies, right? Okay, I appreciate you. Much love to both of y'all.
Yes, sir. Peace and love, boy.
Yes, brother. I'm going to cut out. I'll listen to the system, but
right.
I got to do a little homework, too. Down here for Black History Month, ironically, at certain churches, I do Blacks in History. I have done Marcus Garvey. I've done Frederick Douglass, I've done King. This Saturday, I'm going to be doing the history of Harriet Tubman. So I'm going through my research on Harriet Tubman right now.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Sounds
beautiful.
Good, big man. And I'm going to get you those DVDs back to you as soon as I can. Right now we're in the process of doing some things, so we definitely want to get that to you.
Yeah. In the words of Malcolm X, if you're outside at someone's house listening to this conversation, go home in peace. If anybody put their hand on you, send them to the cemetery. Peace.
Peace. We want to thank Brother Big Man for definitely coming on, giving us his analysis, being that he actually knew these individuals, seen them in full life, up close and personal.
Yes, sir.
Personally knew some of these individuals. You had to bring them on in order to get
right.
a better analysis and a more well-rounded analysis and assessment of what actually was taking place in the 1960s and what was going on in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and then with the 2000s, within these last four generations, four decades, and two generations of what, actually took place. So we get ready to bring the sister on. Hopefully this is her. Area code 803, you're on the line. Hopefully it works here.
I don't hear.
All right, here we go.
Blessed. Greetings.
Blessed.
Peace. Peace. Peace.
We there. Okay, I heard y'all.
We finally here. Exactly. This is the Raw Chef. For those who do not know, this is Sister Sasha Long.
Blessed.
And no doubt she with us tonight in order to get it popping on what is getting ready to happen with that Melanin Longevity Conference, which that we have coming up. And we're going to have several this year. And so we got to make sure that all of y'all attend. So what you got for us?
Well, we gearing up for it, and I'm feeling it's going to be very powerful. It's going to be very positive, and it's going to be a bunch of fun. March the 29th through the 31st, coming up right around the corner, we will be having our first series of the Melanin-Centered Longevity Conference, 3 days and two nights. It's going to be in Catawba, South Carolina, and the focus is basically for us to start really understanding what it means to be holistically healthy, and the goal is to teach practical applications that people can apply into their daily lives that will transform and make a serious and concrete difference in their lives, in their whole wellness, because we crazy right now. We need to get fixed bad.
beautiful.
Yes. So, of course, yourself will be there with us. We'll have a series of classes and workshops that will be facilitated by Dr. Aleem and his goddess, the Princess Kadira, as well. Coach Kair is going to be there. And I will let you, Dr. Aleem, speak about what you plan on bringing and what your contribution is, because, only you do it the way you do.
All right, well, we're going to be dealing with the life force energy known as the Kundalini Shakti, with the Kundalini Shiva, the seven chakras, nine chakras, 12 chakra systems in which that we are developing, which is basically the endocrine gland system, how to regulate the hormonal balance within the body from the particular ductless glands, as well as also dealing with the science of Qigong, Tai Chi, Reiki, plant healing. So we will be dealing with all energy modalities, even iridology, reflexology, acupressure, as well as also many other sciences, along with yourself, Brother Kair. We know Sifu Kair, he's definitely a master at the science of the energy art, so he will also be taking people through the various art forms of the Qigongs and Tai Chi, and many other things. He's also one of the brothers in which that deal with the science of being able to make a woman orgasm with just strokes, above the body of a woman. So without even touching her, is non-touch,
you know, is the science. So we will be there during that portion of the sciences, as well as also many other facets of the science of healing, because it is dealing with the Melanin Centered Longevity Conference. So we will be there, everything, all the science of melanin, the history, the particular sciences as far as what to do with your melanin, how to cleanse your melanin, the particular herbs to take, particular foods to eat. You know,
that's
these
right.
are the medicines. You know, the foods are your medicines. So, as well as also the particular water to drink, you know, and also various breath techniques in which that alters the state of consciousness, taking you from a beta to an alpha to a delta to a theta, delta theta state, what is known as the five states of consciousness, which is dealing with life consciousness, subconsciousness, superconsciousness, magnetic consciousness, and infinite consciousness, along with the other two states of consciousness, which we refer to as interpersonal and intrapersonal consciousness. So we're going to be taking you through everything we possibly can under the sun. There's nothing new to goddamn it, but we're going to get it all together for you.
This conscious and that conscious, because it's time to wake up. And I tell you, it's going to be fun. It's I'm so excited. My elder mom, her name is Dr. Bertha Maxwell Roddy, and she's we're going to be at her space. The Roddy family almost owns, which is a black family, owns the city of Catawba. They own the majority of the land there, and they have a beautiful bed and breakfast sitting on 7 acres, and then they have the family reunion center that's like about a half a mile down the road, and that's where we'll actually be there. And it's going to be all communal lodging as well as outdoor tenting. This is going to be like a holistic boot camp, so get ready. And it's going to be all raw and vegan meals. We want to make it family friendly and affordable, so that there are no excuses, because it's crucial right about now. And I look at it like this: anybody who is not serious about their health, getting in their right mind, having their emotions totally balanced out where they can actually have some self-control, anybody who ain't on that, they in trouble.
Exactly. Did you feel the change in the tides around December 21st, 2012? Did you feel any energy change, any shift in anything?
Yes. Everything has been in a massive like acceleration. It's like we're moving at warp speed. And honestly, anybody got time for holding on to nothing that is not of any value? Whatever it is that's weighing you down, bogging you down, keeping you down, pressing you down, it's time to just let it go, because everything is moving at such an accelerated pace that it takes every ounce of our energy just to keep up. And this is why it's so important that we be balanced. Because the universe and the atmosphere is going through a shifting. We are feeling it seriously on the earth plane. And those who are not in a conscious state, and those who are eating garbage every single day, are the ones that are having the most grossest effects of what's going on out there. So those that are reaching for the light, that's who we're there for, because, you know, that other energy has just got to do what it got to do. So this is it's 3 days and two nights. It's $150 per person. To me, that is like phenomenally, like that's like the serious conscious family community rate. Because again, we want folks. It's important that we get together. Those of us who are like minded, who live in the light, who need support, who need advocacy, who need discipline, who need understanding, who need community, this is our watering hole. So we need to, you know, do more than be armchair revolutionaries, you know, and I say that, you know, just very, like, unoffensively in any kind of way. But what I'm saying is, this is the kind of retreat where you come to learn some serious inner, outer survival skills. because it's just crucial like that right now. Also, we have Dr. Sakino Day, who is an Indigenous Tribal Council. He's also, you know, because we are the majority, many of us, I'm not going to say the majority, but many of us are Moors, and he teaches he teaches our law. He gives us the understanding. He gives us the understanding of all the madness, the illusion of law versus the true law, and how to navigate your way out of that artificial thing. So he'll be there. He'll do a lecture, and then on the Sunday we'll have a panel discussion. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to one of my goals is to keep this in such a way that it's very interactive, it's very active. I think the day of going to lectures where you just sit down and listen is coming quickly to an end. It's time to really get active, and it's time to for us to start doing the things that we talk about, doing the
exactly.
things
yeah.
that we teach others about, you know. It's time to start doing it. And I've been saying this to myself in my own circle for about 3 years now. I'm tired of sitting around talking about this stuff. I'm ready to just do it. Let's do it.
Right.
No doubt about it. And speaking about doing, what are you going to be doing? Because we didn't get to you. We got to everyone
right.
else. What are you going to be providing for this workshop, lecture, / health, / melanin,
mm-hmm.
longevity conference?
Exactly, exactly. Well, first of all, you know, I'm you know, the chef. I'm going to be the one preparing our meals and all of that, and sort of just really leading the team, because there will definitely be tasks and activities that everybody will participate in that help to sustain the retreat for the weekend. But I'll be preparing the raw vegan meals, and I'll be doing a session on how to eat to live, how to maximize your health with superfoods, you know, teaching and reminding us really of the simple laws of health, because it's so easy to be healthy and it's so crazy to just be sick, especially unnecessarily. It's one thing when you don't know, but once you know, all you have to do is apply what you know. How to naturally detox and overcome health challenges through the proper use of food. And while we're there, even the way that we will be eating, the cycles with which we'll be eating will be in alignment with what I have laid out as a natural daily discipline for health. So we will be juicing, we will be getting sun, we will be taking nature walks, we will have yoga in the morning, we will have Tai Chi and Qigong. I'm just so excited. Y'all stop me. Interrupt me. Say something. Ask a question.
We don't want to interrupt, but we do want to add on. Now. So do this mean I'm going to have my pizza and my brownies?
Yes. Oh, no. I'll definitely have pizza and brownies on this time.
Right. And for those who don't know, we're not talking about New York pizza. We're talking about Sasha Lone's uncooked raw pizza.
That's right.
And raw brownies, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what that is, when we say raw, we mean uncooked. In other words, I don't know what she put together with it, but all I know is it tastes is good.
It's live. Only downside on that, every time I think about nuts, because you know the brownies I made from nuts, is that Coach Kair cannot do nuts, so I'm gonna have to make something special for him because he is so special anyway.
Right. Well, don't worry, we got some hydrogen peroxide for him, 8% food grade. Just in case anything happens, he'll be all right.
Okay. Yes, Lord, I tell you. So, so again, it's $150 for that weekend, and registration is wide open. $75 deposit by March the 1st, and your balance is due by the 15th of March. And all the flyers have registration forms on them, but anybody who wants to get the information or have me to send them the registration form via email, they can email me at vegangoddess2013@mail.com, and I will certainly send that out to them.
Say that again.
Vegangoddess2013@mail.com.
Right, so that's vegangoddess2013, right?
At mail.com. Right.
All right. Is there any phone numbers that they can reach us just in case? Also, where can they find the flyer at currently?
The flyer, there is a flyer on Facebook.
Okay.
Then go to my page on Facebook, Sabe, and get that. Or, again, just email me. Email me at vegangoddess, G-O-D-D-E-S-S, 2013@mail.com. And there is a phone number you can also call, and that's 803-518-8927.
All right. We definitely appreciate that. And one more time, that is Sabe, that's S-A-A-B-E-Y. That's Sabe.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Facebook page that you definitely can go to in order to look at the flyer, as well as also sending it to vegangoddess2013@mail.net. So definitely get that out, you know, for we can actually get you on up in there, because you don't want to miss this, I'm telling you. You know, we're going to be going wild with the information. You know, you think that we go wild with the information here on the radio, wait till you see it live and in person.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's an experience for certain. Because, you know, our last longevity conference was a bomb. I got two clients out of that, and we still together still. She's coming to the line. She's already decided, yeah, you'll be getting my deposit, like, next week. So her
right.
and three others are coming down from Baltimore. And
beautiful.
So it was really good.
Beautiful. As a matter of fact, for those who don't know where Catawba is located, that is in South Carolina. So this
yes.
event will take place in South Carolina. So everyone within the surrounding areas, we're talking about North Carolina, Virginia, Florida, Georgia, bring your behinds on. We need to see you there. You just heard the sister, the goddess, talk about that. People are coming from Baltimore, Maryland, so there is no excuse. You don't want to hear an excuse about why you can't come and then tell us, you know, on Facebook, well, brother, you know, how do you do it?
Right. Being an armchair revolutionary.
Right.
It's all
right.
good. I still love him,
though. Right. We're about libertarian revolution, not dietary revolution.
Yes.
Exactly.
So, give out their permission one more time before we go, Sister Sashalom, and that way they can make sure that they have everything and there's no excuses.
Yes, bless it. All righty. It's the Melanin Center Longevity Conference, March the 29th through the 31st, 2013. It's $150 for 3 days and two nights. It is communal lodging and all raw vegan meals, nutritional detox, nature walks, Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, meditation, workshops, a panel discussion. And if you would like to register, well, the presenters are Dr. Aleem L. Bay and his beautiful goddess, Princess Kadira, Coach Kair, myself, and Dr. Sakima Bay. And it's going to be at the Roddy Family Reunion Center in Catawba, South Carolina. You may contact me, Sabe, on Facebook or via email at my email address, which is vegangoddess2013@mail.com. You may also contact for further information or questions at 803-518-8927. And
And we love it, too. And we're going to have you back next weekend because we're going to keep pumping it up every single week.
Yes.
So y'all just get ready because y'all going to be hearing it over and over again. And also, right before that date, you get a chance to come with us on the cruise, which is March 21st through the 25th, which is a right, which is a 5-day, 4-night event, all inclusive, in which that you can actually see the flyer or once again on Facebook, in which that is we going to our annual event. This is now going into our 11th year of going to the various mounds and going to the various pyramids around the Western Hemisphere, which is known as the Americas. We've gone throughout North America, and now we are going into particularly what is now known as the United States. Now we're going into the Olmec region or the Yucatan Peninsula region, and we're going to Cozumel. We're also going to Chichen Itza, Cabal, Tulum. We're going to try to get to those as well. So definitely come on this trip. You don't want to miss it. We're going to the pyramids, all right?
Right.
Olmec, Mayan pyramids, as our ancestral ruins are what is called ruins, but they're still standing to this day, all right? And you want to go and check this out. You want to be able to do your own investigation, not just go to Africa and see the Giza Plateau, which is beautiful and fine, but you didn't know you had pyramids right in your own backyard. So you need to definitely get on down with us, and you can see the flyer. You can actually call us at 252-257-3588 or 252-767-5213. That's 252-767-5213. You can check us out also. Now, we can get you the information, the flyer and everything, with all of the information dealing with the room and board situation. You have three rooms. You have the interior. You have the balcony, as well as also another room, in which that ranges between the areas of $500 to $700 and some odd, and it could be even cheaper if you have a roommate. You know, so definitely want to check that out, all right? So please get in contact with us for those that are interested. Once again, the number is 252-767-5213 or 252-257-3588, all right? Any closing remarks, Mr. Sachalone, what you got for us? You got about 8 minutes.
Well, I just feel like I feel so blessed and so thankful. I really, really do. And so many wonderful things are manifesting. And I'm praying that the same thing is going on in mostly everybody else's reality, even if it's, you know, even if we do look at a bunch of ugly stuff, you know, on the internet,
yeah.
On the news and, you know, and all
yeah.
of that. Because the bottom line is that we are all here on a journey, and everybody is responsible for themselves to a certain degree. We are responsible and on different levels for each other, but our main work is to work on ourselves from the inside out. And the universe is answering a lot of our prayers, and I'm praying that we are really listening, that we are not so caught up in the propaganda that's being thrown at us on a daily that we don't really see what's really going on. And that's what this longevity conference is all about. It's about waking ourselves up on every level possible so that we can totally be aware holistically of what's going on around us so that we can more safely navigate through it. Because when I'm getting where I'm going, I'm praying you're getting there too. All right?
No doubt.
That's
all right. Yeah, well, we're traveling right along with you. Brother L, Grand Sheik, do you have any closing remarks you want to say? We got about maybe... We still got about maybe seven minutes left here. You got any closing remarks?
No, yes, sir. Brother, I have enjoyed the Blog Talk Show tonight, and hopefully we will have a big man here again pretty soon.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And I'm glad to see you here. She talked about... What was that more?
I was saying that me and Brother Big Man are going to do a whole show, along with you, we're going to do a whole show on the Black Panther Party and how
okay.
they infiltrate. Right. That's probably going to be probably in about 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks. And also, Sister Sasha Long, the goddess, is going to be back with us. The Raw Vegan Chef is going to be with us once again every week, you know,
good.
All the way until April. You know, basically,
wonderful.
You know, sharing her own points of views and getting that information out on the science of health. Matter of fact,
yes,
we might just have to pick her, the third co-host, so she can, you know, give out this health information to our people because it's so valuable and so much needed.
Right, and how, and how to detoxify our bodies and everything, because we definitely need that.
That's yes. Right.
And it definitely protects us from a lot of sickness and diseases that too many of our more people have today.
That's right.
That's right.
You know, and I know it'll help me a lot. You know,
yeah.
It helps get rid of a lot of these constipations and diabetes, high blood pressures,
that's right.
Arthritis, and things that of that nature. And the holistic is very, like you said, in these times and days, 2013, the age of Aquarius. This is the age of truth. So,
That's right.
Everybody got to get ready, get online, you know, or else be left behind.
That's right.
So, you know, that's my note on that.
That's right. And for those who haven't got a chance in order to check us out, you can go online to our new website. It's www.DrAlimElBey. That's DrAlimElBey. That's DrAlimElBey.com. And if you go to metaphysically, the metaphysical end of religious confusion, you will see Sister Sashalom up there on the right-hand side in the yoga position with her hands in the prayer position there doing her thing. And the article talks about the fact of the religious confusion ending, you know, within with the science of metaphysics, you know, and showing how the symbolism in which that we have seen throughout history, based on Matsunetta, based on the different other writers on the wall, as we would say, or the scripts, you know, whether it's from the Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, the Spanish shot, the Holy Quran, the Vestas, or the five Buddha, the five baskets of Buddha, you know, or whatever the case may be. It all talks about the signs of the human body, the physiology, the anatomy, the temple of God, and what you must do in order to preserve it. And so, of course, we know, like in 1 Corinthians 3:16, it speaks about, do you not know that you are the temple of God? You know, and do you not know that God dwells within his temple? You know, in which that, because God dwells in the temple, you was, you know, you was bought at a price, and therefore you must glorify God in your body, you know. And if you do not glorify God in your body, then you will suffer the consequences, because consequences of the physical body. You know, so obviously we have the chances, like the scripture speaks about, of being able to live immortal, you know, to become immortal while in flesh. You know, there's a science to it. And so that's what we're also going to be speaking about too. I mean, it comes through the science of breath, it comes through the proper foods, it comes through the proper drink. So we just want to say that before we close out, and we appreciate each and every one of y'all. Thank you. God, it's Sashalom for coming on and breaking that information down for the Melanin Center Longevity Conference, as well as also Grand Sheik, Professor L, for coming on and being the co-host, as usual, you know, getting down to the bottom of things. And we appreciate both of y'all, and we're going to see everyone here next Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
Blessings.
Peace. Peace and love.
Peace and love.
Islam.
Peace and love.
Islam.
Bring it back.
Going down. Lost everything.